Can everybody hear me?
Okay, great. Thanks,
okay,
Bob.
Good deal. This
Sorry
is case
for the delay.
Number 2011-18, I apologize. This is the public hearing for Hickory Ridge Subdivision in the Branson Township. It's Section 26, Township 24, Range 22. The request, the applicant, Homestead Branson Properties, is requesting approval to create large residential lots, which would become Phase 2 and Phase 3. The history of this is Hickory Ridge Subdivision was replatted in 2007 with no record of an original decision by the Planning Commission. The current application was approved for concept on June 20th, 2011. General description of the property. The subject property contains approximately 162.80 acres and is located off of State Highway 160 and Chapel Hill Road. The property is currently vacant. The adjoining properties to the request are residential and agricultural. The history on this Hickory Ridge subdivision, like I said, was originally replatted in 2007 with no record of an original decision by the Planning Commission. In review, the proposed Phase 2 subdivision would consist of 10 5-acre lots, with the proposed Phase 3 subdivision consisting of 3 large acreage lots. The project will be served by individual wastewater systems and private wells. The project received a total score of negative 5 on the policy checklist out of a maximum possible score of 43. The policies receiving a negative score were right-of-way / roads, emergency water supply, waste disposal surface, use compatibility, wildlife habitat and fisheries, and traffic. This is a copy of the two plats, of first the plat of Phase 2 and the plat of Phase 3. In summary, if the Taney County Planning Commission approves this request, the following requirements shall apply unless revised by the Planning Commission. First, compliance with the provisions of the Taney County Development Guidance Code. Second, compliance letters from fire, sewer, and water districts, if applicable. Third, no outside storage of equipment or solid waste materials. Fourth, this decision is subject to all existing easements. Number five, Division 1 permits will be required for all applicable structures in the development. Sixth, the required infrastructure or road improvements shall either be constructed or an appropriate security shall be provided prior to to final plat approval. And seventh, the decision of record shall be filed with the Taney County Recorder's Office within 120 days, or the approval shall expire. We've got just a brief video here of the site. And that concludes the staff's presentation.
Okay, thank you very much. I think our representative is here tonight somewhere. Eddie Wolf, are you in the... Eddie's in the building. Okay, good. And you are also the first and only person signed up to speak tonight. Okay.
Bob just got them mixed up.
Okay, so the Hickory Ridge one, which I called the Hickory 2 one first. So.
Oh, did you?
Yes.
Okay. I thought it was Hickory 1 that you used.
That's the way he handed them to me, so that's the way he did them. So the Hickory 2 one, tell me a little bit more, but is that the one that's right at the front of the subdivision?
Yeah, Hickory 2 is the one right at the entrance when you come in on the west side of the road. And there where you should have seen the metal gates, that's where the entrance will be into it.
Okay.
And we're basically going to develop the whole ridgetop, not deal with any of the bad terrain. We're going to stay directly on top. Anything that's like a 10% grade or larger, we're going to leave it in place. We're not
okay.
going to bother it, leave it as green space, and try to make it fit with the terrain out there and make it a pretty development.
Okay. Any other questions from the commission?
Okay, you say you have 162 acres. What goes going on with the rest of this acreage?
The on Hickory 2 there, the one we're discussing, there's 30 acres in that parcel. And it's the small residential. See, that's what I was saying, Sean, is they're kind of mixed up.
Okay.
Hickory 2 is a small lot. He represented the 5-acre lots, which is phases 2 and 3. But the video was the one to Hickory 2.
I see. Okay.
Okay. All of the acreage that's remaining out there, except for the 30 acres up front where Hickory 2 is going to set, will be used up in the 162 acres. So they will not have any property left that isn't platted when we get through out there. It'll completely dispose of all of it.
This is a current subdivision. It's the Hickory Ridge subdivision.
Yes.
Is that right? And then
yep.
they're adding in what's left of the other acreage.
Right. You know, we're just running through what there is no decision of at all and to get a good clean record of everything as we discussed.
Okay.
Since we couldn't find a Division 3 on any of it.
All right. Anything else? All right.
Stay
close.
Okay.
Thanks. Mr. Atchley, if you want to go ahead and do, I think the next one is Hickory Ridge.
Testing. Got it. Just testing.
I don't think there is. Should we call for any comments on Hickory Ridge?
Since we have so many folks signing up tonight, if we just want to make sure that somebody didn't sign the wrong sheet. If anybody is here to comment on Hickory Ridge, they must be here for some other reason. Okay. All right. Very good. Let's move on to the next project, please.
Okay, and I do apologize for the confusion. This one is actually case number 2011-18. This is the public hearing for Hickory Ridge 2 subdivision in the Branson Township, section 26, township 24, range 22. The request, the applicant, Homestead Branson Properties, is requesting approval to create small municipal-sized residential lots for the construction of smaller-sized homes. The history of this Hickory Ridge subdivision was replatted in 2007, again with no record of the original decision by the Planning Commission. The current application was approved for concept on June 20th, 2011. The general description, the subject property contains approximately 32.52 acres and is located off Newberry Road, currently identified as Hickory Ridge Subdivision Tract 4. The property is currently vacant, and the properties adjoining the request are residential and agricultural. The history, again, was that this was replatted in 2007 with no record of the original decision. In review, the proposed subdivision would consist of 29 single-family residential lots, each less than 1 acre in size, with approximately 14.71 acres being platted as green space. The project will be served by a community well and a wastewater treatment plant. The project received a total score of -6 on the policy checklist out of a maximum possible score of 47. The policies receiving a negative score were right-of-way/roads, emergency water supply, waste disposal service, use compatibility, wildlife habitat and fisheries, and traffic. This shows a plat of the area in question. You can see these are fairly small-sized lots. Most of these are about a quarter of an acre, with two fairly large areas of green space or open space. In summary, if the Taney County Planning Commission approves this request, the following requirements shall apply, unless revised by the Planning Commission. First off, compliance with the provisions of the Taney County Development Guidance Code. Secondly, compliance letters from the fire, sewer, and water districts, if applicable. Third, no outside storage of equipment or solid waste materials. Fourth, this decision is subject to all existing easements. Fifth, Division I permits will be required for all applicable structures in the development. Sixth, the required infrastructure improvements, road and wastewater system, shall either be constructed or an appropriate security shall be provided prior to final plat approval. And seventh, this decision of record shall be recorded within the Recorder of Deeds office within 120 days. I did actually show the wrong video in error.
So. Okay. So we've already seen that one?
Yes.
Okay, very good. Now, Eddie, you're also the representative for this one. Is that correct, Eddie Wolf? Again, you're the only person signed up to speak tonight, so. We're about to get this figured out.
Last time when we had the concept, I told you I didn't know for sure about the lot numbers, so what we have got is what it will be. They were satisfied with the numbers we got, so.
Hold that up a little bit.
That works better. Okay. But anyhow, that'll be the total numbers that we're asking for is 29.
Okay.
And that is, this one here is the video we've seen on the first one.
Is that the one that's in the back?
That's no, the one this in the front? Is actually the one that's up front.
The one that's up front, okay.
Right. You go in behind, right behind the fire station. And okay. Drive in right there at those double gates to go into this property, and it's the ridge tops what it is.
Okay.
Then the other one, the first one was where we drive all the way through the development, get to the very end down there, and then take a road off to the northeast there behind John's house, and it's that wooded hilltop there to the north of the house.
Okay.
Okay.
Any questions?
Any other questions?
Okay.
Let's just get on with the main meeting.
All right. Thank you. All right, Bob, if you're ready to move on, let's move on to Branson Sports Entertainment Complex.
Okay, this is case number 2011-16. The applicant is Russell Cook, or the Branson Sports Entertainment Complex. The request, the applicant is requesting to operate a motorsports facility for automobile, motorcycle, and BMX bike racing, concerts, car or other trade shows, food, retail, commercial, public events, and faith-based and community gatherings. The location is 689 High Mountain Drive, Ridgedale, Missouri. It's east of the intersection of Thunderbird Road and U.S. Highway 65. It falls within the Oliver Township in sections 8, 9, and 17, Township 21, Range 21. The background and site history on this site consists of approximately 809 acres, currently containing a single-family residence, and has served as a fully guided deer and elk hunting facility. On February 22, 2011, a notice of violation was sent to Russell Cook from the Missouri Department of Natural Resources concerning land disturbance activities of over 1 acre without a Missouri State operating permit. On February 22, 2011, Taney County Land Disturbance Permit number 11-01 was obtained for the 75 acres of disturbance, with a security of $750 per acre being submitted to the Planning Department. The applicant has at this time also received a Missouri State operating permit from the Missouri DNR for the 75 acres of land disturbance. The planning staff has at this time requested that the applicant admit the land disturbance permit and required security for the amount of land that has been disturbed. The applicant has stated that this proposed project will include a 3/4 mile asphalt track suitable for standards of racing, stadium seating for 65,000 fans, a road course suitable for a variety of types of racing, luxury suites, a hospitality village, media center, concessions, concourse with food, beverage, gifts, and other amenities, a welcome plaza with areas for souvenir trailers, corporate displays, and entertainment, fan-accessible infield, which will contain garages for race teams and technical inspection facilities for the sanctioning bodies, RV and camping facilities for participants and fans, concerts, car shows, trade shows, food, retail, commercial development, public events, and faith-based and community gatherings. This is a site plan that shows just really briefly. This is a three-quarter mile track. This is the road course area. You can kind of see some of the proposed parking area. Going through the absolute and relative policy analysis, under water quality, the site is not within a FEMA floodplain. The site drains generally to an unnamed branch of Turkey Creek with no significant concentrated flow from upstream of the property. The applicant's engineer has indicated that best management practices will be utilized both during the construction phase and also permanent measures including bioswales, rain gardens, bioretention basins, detention basins, and grass buffer strips. They have indicated that they're going to leave a 200-foot wide undisturbed wooded riparian corridor along the unnamed branch of Turkey Creek. On February 22, 2011, the land disturbance permit was issued by Taney County and by the Missouri DNR. But as I said earlier, the planning staff has requested an amendment of this land disturbance permit and the required security for the amount of land that has been disturbed. The applicant's engineer has indicated that a survey of both the graded and cleared area of the site, an amended application for land disturbance, and an appropriate security will be submitted to the Planning Department office. The Missouri Department of Natural Resources conducted an on-site compliance inspection for land disturbance activity on June 23, 2011. And actually, the representatives from the DNR also contacted our office today to let us know at this point that there are no unsatisfactory features noted in their inspection. The DNR did, however, express concerns about the limits of the disturbance because right now the permit is for a 75-acre disturbed area. Under sewage disposal on July 5th, 2011, the Taney County Regional Sewer District Board voted unanimously to enter into contract negotiations with the BSEC to extend a trunk sewer within the Turkey Creek watershed. Sanitary sewage collection facilities connected to the Taney County Regional Sewer District via a proposed trunk line is to be constructed parallel with Turkey Creek, connecting to the City of Hollister Wastewater Treatment Plant. A sanitary sewer main line would be dedicated to the public, with the collection lines and laterals remaining private. Under environmental policies, there are no known soil limitations based on the soils in the area. Under slopes, the applicant's engineer has indicated that the developed area is to be designed below 30%, but that any areas that would happen to exceed the 30% slope would be designed by a licensed professional engineer with geotechnical engineering being monitored. Under wildlife habitats and fisheries, the developer indicated again that a 200-foot wide wildlife and riparian corridor will be provided along the unnamed branch of Turkey Creek, and there are no documentation of any protected wildlife species in the area. Under air quality, the applicant's engineer has stated that the proposed development will not have an effect on the overall air quality in the area. Taney County does not currently fall within an EPA air quality attainment area, non-attainment area. The off-site nuisances, noise, the racetrack, the applicant has stated that the racetrack is to be placed in a 60-foot deep bowl-like configuration with the surrounding terrain being at a higher elevation. Topography and the racetrack configuration may help to mitigate the sound waves. Existing undisturbed trees and vegetation may soften and mute some of these sound waves as well. The staff is proposing that sound levels be both monitored and controlled off-site. The staff is also recommending penalties for nonconformance with maximum off-site noise levels. Under lighting, that could be another concern. The applicant's engineer has indicated that exterior lighting will be indirect and will not affect adjoining property. Structural screening of solid waste containers. The applicant's engineer has indicated that the development will screen all solid waste containers, basically dumpsters, from view by the public. Under structural screening of outdoor equipment, storage, etc., the outdoor storage of equipment or materials will be screened from street level or placed inside buildings. Compatibility factors. Under use compatibility, the applicant has indicated that adjoining residential areas to the north and east will be separated from the development by an existing natural vegetation buffer, which will be left undisturbed. The staff is, however, recommending that areas at the perimeter of the riparian corridor receive additional vegetative plantings where natural vegetation is either non-existent or insufficient to meet the county's buffer yard requirements. The key staff concern is noise mitigation, and we feel that that additional plantings could actually help to mitigate noise somewhat as well. Under lot coverage, building bulk and scale of building materials, the building coverage as a whole over the whole 809 acres would be relatively small compared to the overall site size. The applicant's engineer has indicated that the stadium seating would exceed the 70-foot height limitation in the development guidance code. It would allow for this to be exceeded basically as long as it's not within 300 feet of an existing single-family residence and the maximum portion of the structure that may be built below base plane shall not exceed 40% of the height of the structure. Under structural screening of rooftop equipment and vents, the applicant's engineer has indicated that all rooftop equipment and vents will be screened from sight with parapet walls and other architectural screening. Landscape buffers, again, the applicant has indicated that buffer yards will be provided in accordance with the standards of the Taney County Development Guidance Code, both adjacent to public streets and residential properties, and a 200-foot wildlife and riparian corridor along the branch of Turkey Creek will be left natural. Under local economic development, under the right to farm, the proposed development will not limit the viability of any existing agricultural uses. Right to operate, the proposed development will not limit the viability of any existing industrial operations. And under diversification and economic development, the applicant has indicated that the development will create hundreds of year-round jobs, including construction-related employment, secondary jobs, and potential growth in the surrounding area. The Missouri Department of Economic Development will require that the applicant submit job creation data, which they will have to analyze, the Missouri Department of Economic Development, in order for the applicant to qualify for state highway improvements through the Economic Development Program. Under site planning, design, and occupancy, provision is going to be made for common driveways, circulation, and parking. The applicant's engineer has indicated off-street parking, including handicapped access, will be provided to meet or exceed Taney County standards. A portion of the parking area will be paved and striped, but the largest portion of the parking area is to remain grass. The applicant's engineer has indicated the recreational vehicle parking area and camping areas will also be designed in accordance with Taney County standards. The applicant does plan to self-impose building codes, basically the IBC or International Building Codes, for all structures constructed within this project and seek an independent third-party code compliance review. Under commercial development patterns, the uses within the proposed development are clustered into one area and will share common access points to the highway and parking. Under development buffering, the applicant shall provide landscape buffers both by preserving existing vegetation and by adding vegetation adjacent to public roads which meet or exceed Taney County standards. Under traffic, the applicant has sought the financial participation on a state and local level, and what they've really talked about at this point is construction of a new access road to the Branson Airport, construction of the three new interchanges previously called out in the MoDOT long-range transportation plan, which would remove the signalized intersections of US 65 at highways 265 and 86 to allow the north and southbound traffic to continue without interruption. Construction of the remaining portions of US 65 East Outer Road called out on the MoDOT long-range transportation plan. MoDOT has indicated that the Branson Sports Entertainment Complex folks have sought financial participation in the project with funding coming from the Economic Development Program. At this point, kind of where they stand, from my understanding, is BSEC is to submit a traffic study to MoDOT and also job creation data to the Missouri Department of Economic Development. Under emergency services, the applicant indicated construction of a public safety building that will house fire, ambulance, sheriff, highway patrol substations, and a traffic management center. And this traffic management center is basically a center to manage traffic during periods of high traffic volumes to safely and efficiently manage traffic flow. Right away on existing roads, development has access to existing roads which definitely need more substantial improvements, and the right-of-way would have to be provided in accordance with MoDOT and Taney County standards. Under internal improvements, the water system service, the developer has indicated that this development would be served by a central water system, which would be permitted by the Missouri DNR. The water for drinking and fire protection would, however, be provided by multiple small wells and an elevated storage tank. The applicant's engineer has indicated that facilities will be designed to meet firefighting requirements for storage and flow. Under emergency water supply, the development will be equipped with fire hydrants capable of delivering adequate firefighting pressures, and they may also have to look at equipping some buildings with sprinkler systems as well. Under pedestrian circulation infrastructure, the applicant has indicated that adequate internal sidewalks and pedestrian access will be provided to all facilities, and that these sidewalks will be separated from vehicular traffic. Parking loading areas, like I said, the applicant's engineer has indicated that all parking lots and loading areas would be provided in accordance with Taney County standards. The development will provide parking spaces based on the seating capacity of 65,000, which would be one parking space for each 2.5 seats provided. All utilities will be located underground, and solid waste, they're to provide appropriate receptacles for weekly disposal. The staff has made a number of recommendations. If the Taney County Planning Commission approves this request, the following requirements shall apply unless revised by the Planning Commission. First off, compliance with the provisions of the Taney County Development Guidance Code and the Taney County Road Standards that include plans for the following: stormwater management, utility easements and building line setbacks, improvements with scales of buildings, streets, on-site parking and utilities, a complete landscape and buffering plan, showing the location, size, and planting materials for all buffer yards, both adjacent to public rights-of-way and residential properties, a lighting plan showing the location, height, and other specifications on the lighting to be provided for the development, a traffic impact study shall be submitted to the Taney County Road and Bridge Department, and also, of course, to MoDOT. An engineering public improvement plan shall be submitted to the Taney County Road and Bridge Department prior to the construction of a new access road to the Branson Airport. We would want to see compliance letters from the fire, sewer, and water districts, the Missouri Department of Transportation, the Missouri DNR, including all other entities which have requirements governing a development of this nature. Thirdly, prior to the issuance of certificates of conformance, the developer shall upgrade the existing transportation system and provide the necessary capacity to serve this development as required by both Taney County and the Missouri Department of Transportation. Fourth, a 200-foot wide riparian corridor shall remain along the branch of Turkey Creek and shall be left in its natural state. Areas of the perimeter of the riparian corridor shall require additional vegetative plantings where natural vegetation is non-existent or insufficient to meet the county's buffer yard requirements, as found in the provisions of Appendix J of the Development Guidance Code. Fifth, a minimum of a 40-foot natural vegetative buffer meeting all the requirements of Appendix J of the Taney County Development Guidance Code shall be established between the road course, including any accessory structures, and the adjoining property to the west. The planting shall be established per the provisions of Table J1 for commercial facilities. Sixth, four sound pressure, basically decibel level measuring stations, shall be established located no more than a half mile from the center of the track. The location of these stations is to be determined by Taney County based upon need. Seventh, decibel readings shall be taken by an independent contractor and submitted to Taney County. The independent contractor shall be specified by Taney County, with the contractor's fees being paid by the owner slash operator of the motorplex. Eighth, decibel readings at any of the four measuring stations shall not exceed a sound pressure level of 60 decibels. A $5,000 fine will be imposed upon the owner slash operator for any readings exceeding 60 decibels. Ninth, all light sources within the development shall be arranged so that no direct illumination leaves the site toward adjacent residential areas or any roadways. 10, due to the height and size of the stadium seating, which is in excess of the 70-foot height limitation, the structure will be constructed in compliance with the current edition of the International Building Codes with an independent third party completing code compliance review. 11th, no outside storage of equipment or solid waste materials. 12, this decision is subject to all existing easements. 13, Division 2 permits will be required for all applicable structures in the development. 14, prior to issuing certificates of compliance, a copy of the MDNR operating permit for the water supply shall be presented to the Taney County Planning Department. And 15, this decision of record shall be filed with the Taney County Recorder's Office within 120 days, or the approval shall expire.
Bob, you've got a video for that, I guess?
We do have a video. It is my understanding that all of the Planning and Zoning Commission members, with the exception of one, have visited the site individually.
Okay. Which the video, again, is for the members of the commission. So,
okay.
And being that we've got so many folks signed up tonight, we're gonna pass on that.
Okay.
As a reminder, the recommendations are just that. They're recommendations to the commission on what we may or may not do. We may change some of those. We may add some of those. We may take some of those out. But those are recommendations from the staff for us to take a look at. So it's a starting point anyway. A couple of things. First, I want to thank everybody for being here tonight and for your interest in Taney County and this project. We're glad you're here. We want to hear from you. We want to hear from what your thoughts are. That's why we are here, are to hear from you. So if you've not done this before and you're nervous about it, don't be. We want to hear from each of you. However, we do have some rules that we'd like to go by, especially in a large crowd like this. And I know some folks haven't done this before, so I want to go over real briefly what our procedures are and how we do things so everybody understands it. If you want to speak tonight, you need to sign up. If you haven't signed up yet, and I've got most of the sheets here, but if you haven't signed up yet, there probably is still one sheet back there for folks to sign up on those. So if somebody wants to speak, Scott's got it right there. So if you want to speak, think you might want to, then you'll need to sign that. I will do my best. Some of you have worse handwriting than me, so I will do my best to read your names and get them right. But maybe you'll know who I'm talking about when I say it. When I call your name and it's your turn to speak, and also the next person's name, since we've got so many up here, we're going to have an empty seat right over here. So whoever's first, just come on up here. Except for those, we got a couple folks that are doing PowerPoint presentations. Then the next person can sit right there. That way we can move them along as quickly as we can, because we have about 75 or 80 people to speak tonight. I know the first couple are going to be pretty long presentations because it's the developer and then some other folks that are representing a bunch of folks that are here. So be as brief as you can. I've asked them to do the same thing. They've indicated to me they're going to be about 20 minutes, but it would be great if the rest of everybody could be around 5 minutes. At that time, 75 people in 5 minutes, my math's not that good, but that's over 6 hours. So But we want to hear from everybody. So if you've got something to say, we want to hear it. Okay, so be brief. If you feel like somebody's already made the point, when it's your turn to speak and I call your name, just feel free to get up here and give us your name, where you're from, and then just say, hey, I agree with the opposition, or I agree with so-and-such if you know who it was, and then that'll be enough. But if you think you can say something better than they've said it and we need to hear it, please, by all means, let us know what you've got to say. I have asked the developer's representative to go first to maybe cover some of the stuff they've got, and then the folks that represent quite a few folks to go next with their PowerPoint presentations, and then from then on we'll go from the podium. All comments while speaking need to be directed to us at the commission, not out in the crowd. If you've got questions, and I'm certain you will, we're going to do our best to write those down. At the end, we're going to have the developers come back up and ask them those questions that are pertinent and important to the decision-making process. When we're done with that, I'll ask the crowd if I've missed anything. Obviously, if it's a question that, you know, I may not get the answer you want, but I'll do my best to ask the question. And last but not least, with this many people in the room, I know everybody's not going to agree. So please be respectful of other folks as they're speaking. And we're trying to hear what they have to say so we can make the best decision we can make for Taney County. And we can't do that if somebody in the crowd is making noise or making comments and being distracting. So I certainly don't want anybody that's here tonight to hear this to ask them to leave because they're being distracting. I don't want to go that. I don't think I'll have to, but I do want to remind everybody to please be respectful of what others have to say. With that, let's get started. I know we've already spent a lot of time. So Tom Gammon, I know your folks, if you want to come on up and present first, you are here. So.
There we go. All right.
Had to keep it pretty close to your, there you go.
There we go. All right. Well, number one, I want to thank the Planning and Zoning Commission for giving us the opportunity to present tonight. We're excited about our development. We're excited about what it can bring to the area. We believe Branson Sports and Entertainment Complex will bring new and vibrant visitors to the marketplace. The Tri-Lakes area offers three major components that attract visitors to the area: the White River Basin, the entertainment along Highway 76, and Silver Dollar City are the main attractors. We believe that motorsports will be an attractor to this, to the area and to the market. We believe that we will lower the age of the visitor, and we will adjust the ratio of male to female. Currently, in the marketplace, there are about 60% female and 40% male visitors. We believe motorsports will bring that closer to even. The motorsports customer, about 59% male, 41% female. That alone will add visitors to the area. We understand tonight, and I won't go into economic developments very much because the issue tonight is land use. And so our presentation will be based on land use. We do ask for a chance to rebut some arguments that may be presented against us this evening at the close. The project itself will also add much-needed construction jobs. If you look at the national construction unemployment rate, it's 15%. And this, our area, is higher than that, and we definitely need more jobs. I want to say also that we've got a very professional team that we've assembled, nationally recognized as well as quality local professionals. Spencer Jones, our civil engineer from Great River Engineering, Bob Stockdale from Buxton Cubic Dodd Creative, Bob Carlson from DLR Sports Group. Bob has been responsible to design the Kansas Motor Speedway as well as several other motorsports venues. Chris Eels, who is unable to be with us tonight due to emergency surgery, is our track designer from HNTB. Kip Strauss is our traffic engineer from HNTB. John Jekyll is our acoustic engineer and our acoustic expert that will present tonight. William Moore, our development attorney, and Curtis Gray, our director of business development. And my name is Tom Gammon. I'm director of development and construction for the project. With that said, I'm going to turn it over to Bob Stockdale, and we'll do our presentation, we will try and be fairly brief with our points because we want to give everybody a chance to speak, and I'd like to get home before 1 o'clock this morning.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Tom. Staff did a great job of highlighting most of the things we probably needed to say, so in the interest of time, I don't want to repeat that, much of what was said. Just go to the next slide, please. The staff did a good job of explaining the project in some detail. I just want to point out a couple of things. One is that because of the amount of land involved, we're looking for ways to utilize the property besides motorsports for other activities, particularly passive activities. Because of the large parking areas, the leveled grass areas, we're actually looking at developing some soccer fields so we can host some soccer tournaments during the year and then do the playoff event within the facility itself, within the stadium itself. You can see that there's a motor course shown on the property along the western edge. We're looking at alternate locations where that might be based on cost, land, sound issues, and so forth. So that's a conceptual location at this time, although we feel very strongly that that will be part of the program. We're not sure exactly where that might end up on the property. And one other point I want to make, and then I'll turn it over to Bob Carlson. The property itself, in terms of a motorsport venue, lies between Highway 65 to the west, railroad serving commercial and passenger traffic to the east, as well as the airport. So from a compatibility issue, we believe that this is a good location for this facility, given the neighbors that we have surrounding the property. I want to introduce Bob Carlson. He's the architect working on the facility itself, and
thank you. Again, my name is Bob Carlson with DLR Group Architects. My expertise is really from the ticketed gates in. My expertise is in motorsports. I've worked at Daytona, Homestead, Talladega, Phoenix, and most recently Kansas Speedway. The project you see on the slide, that footprint is for 65,000 seats. That's our master plan. The seating bowl is half built into the ground, so it's on a berm, and the other half is structure up above ground level. So really half and half. The bowl is sunken down into the ground by about 60 feet. The yellow band on the back stretch you see is an RV parking area, and the kind of the red-pink area out in front is the midway where sponsors and drivers set up displays and souvenir sales. Over the last 10 years, we've really seen a focus in sports architecture go to the ordinary fan, people like you and me that buy a ticket. And our focus on this design team is really to make it a great fan experience. Wider seats, deeper treads so you have more knee room, easier access to do this up and down the aisles. We're really trying to make sure the concessions are right, toilets are right, and very concerned and very have a lot of experience in life safety in large facilities like this. We have a special consultant that we use that help us with the life safety aspect, both fire protection and exiting. And then we'll have a third party review both our drawings and the construction, do construction observation to make sure that what we drew, what was agreed upon, is built. Great facilities also need really great events. And Curtis Gray is going to come up and speak a little bit about the mix of events that we have at the Speedway.
Thank you. Good evening. A little bit about my background. I spent the last 10 years as the president of Homestead Miami Speedway in South Florida. Prior to that, I was 17 years at R.J. Reynolds in their sports marketing area. Seven of those years, the last 7 years I was there, I was the director of the NASCAR Winston Cup Series. So I have a varied background in motorsports. But what I want to talk about tonight is the mix of what's going on at the Speedway, at the Motorplex. And what we talked about, and you've seen probably, is 200 days of usage, plus or minus. I know there's sometimes at a new speedway, people get concerned, is that 200 days of 60,000 people being there? No, it's not. It's actually about a half of that is what we call passive use. So community events, church events, school events, running, bicycling, those kind of events to keep the facility used year-round. And then, but we will have racing there. Now, when I say racing, the big events will probably be only 4 to 6 weekends of a year, and that's from 20,000 to 60,000 people during those weekends. other than that, there's testing, and you're talking about limited number of cars there for testing. But I want to say one of the biggest events we have at the Speedway will be manufacturer product launches, where you have BMW or Mercedes or Audi or whoever it is come in, and they bring all their dealers from all over the country, if not all over the world. My point there is that whatever type of event it is, one of the goals we have is bringing people in from other places and outside the region to build those economic impact numbers. And that's why motorsports have such large economic impact numbers compared to other professional sports, but are mostly local type visitors coming to those events. The next slide that we have shows a breakdown of the percentages of these events. And what you see there is a large percentage of the events that will be out there proposed is what we call passive events, the community, church, charity type events, and then a breakdown of the other type of events that will be there, again, split pretty evenly between motorsports and passive events. With that, I'm going to turn it on over to Spencer Jones, who will handle our environmental.
One thing that we recognize with this project is that for it to be successful, we have to make sure that we're good stewards of the environment, and that relates to both stormwater, wastewater, and the drinking water. And so to do that, we're trying to use the latest state-of-the-art techniques to make sure that we manage that stormwater, collect it on site, and then reuse it. One of the objectives in doing that is trying to use low water requiring native material and then irrigate with that stormwater that we collect in our rain gardens and cisterns there on site. Another thing that we recognize, being a good environmental steward, is that we need to be able to protect the adjacent properties from light intrusion. So we'll be using, again, new technology that helps shield those lights to make sure that it's shed on property rather than spilling over onto adjoining property. And then finally, using recycled material. And one important fact is that, like with the aluminum grandstands, a large percentage of that material is recycled material. So we're, again, recognizing the benefits that those provide to a project, and we think that this project can be an example of how other projects might incorporate that into their development. So we see ourselves as leaders from that perspective. The next component is recognizing some of the issues that have existed as far as wastewater treatment and sewage. Currently, the area does not have a centralized collection system. We have been in negotiations and discussions with the Taney County Regional Sewer District to extend a trunk sewer. This project has been on their priority matrix for several years, and we're working with them to try to help that come to fruition. That would take care of some of the illicit discharges which have occurred in that watershed, improving water quality and the standard of living for people that live in that area. Some of those would be some of the neighboring subdivisions, as well as Branson Airport and the Branson Creek development. Next slide, please. Finally, we have coordinated with the two electric companies that provide electrical power in the area. Bob spoke a little bit about that we want to be good stewards in that regards. We know that some of the neighboring properties, as development has occurred, have had a negative impact on their water and their well. So we want to mitigate against that. And as we do our study for dealing with our drinking water needs and storage, that we want to make sure that we take into account the neighboring wells to not impact them. So we're putting a plan in place for that. Another thing is waste management. We will be working with a licensed trash hauler that has a recycle program. We want to incorporate that not only during the construction phase of the project, but actually during our operations to help separate some of those waste materials for recycle. Again, being good stewards of the environment and a leader in regards to those issues. With that, the next issue we'll talk about is traffic, and Kip Strauss from HNTB will give you some information in that regards.
Thank you. And I just wanted to mention that HNTB provides national experience and expertise on speedways and all different types of stadiums and arenas. And so that's what I'm going to be focusing on. We've already started working on coordination with MoDOT, as well as the State Highway Patrol, in developing or right-sizing the infrastructure needs in this area. If you look at the exhibit, the two interchanges to the north, with 265 and 86 are already on MoDOT's long-range plan. So We are hoping to partner with MoDOT and help accelerate those interchanges. And so we will be developing a traffic study to identify the right size infrastructure needs. We'll also be developing a traffic management plan. We have experience doing this with Super Bowls and World Series and stuff. So we'll be bringing in our national experience on that to develop traffic management. And we'll also have a focus on safety. When we look at traffic, we will maintain an access, an open lane, if you will, in each direction for emergency vehicles and access to the airport and other neighborhoods in the area. Thank you.
Next slide, please. Thank you, Kip. My name is John Jekyll, work for H&TB Corporation, and as Kip said, we're a national firm. Do transportation environmental noise studies across the country. Last count, about 39 different states have 39 years of experience. On the left-hand side of the slide here are some typical noise levels. We talk in terms of decibels, A-weighted, because the A-weighted noise level is what the human ear corresponds to the best. Conversation, not amplified, and not when you're hollering at your spouse, is about 65 dBA. Interstate noise at the right-of-way is about 75 to 80 dBA. Highway 65, when we took a measurement earlier this in June, we had 60 dBA, not at the right-of-way, it was a ways away from it, but about 60 dBA. A plane taking off, about 100 dBA, that'd be a commercial jet. And then we get into the fact that Mother Nature really plays havoc with noise. Mother Nature can make noise sound louder, or it can make it sound softer, depending upon the conditions of the air, the directions of the wind, the temperature, the humidity, cloud cover, inversion layers, etc. Now, on the chart we have here, a number of locations. Basically, we have already looked at 20-plus different locations scattered around the facility, anywhere from a half mile to 2.4 miles from the facility. The farthest one would be Big Cedar Lodge. Some of the closer ones are right off of Highway 65. The noise levels to the west do not include the grandstand. That was not included in the calculations. It does include some change in topography, but we're still working on refining that. So as you go around the complex, you can see Big Cedar Lodge, we're projecting 30 to 45 dBA. That would be under a full chorus green condition. Top of the Rock, 53 to 60 dBA, probably in the realm of what they're experiencing today off of a busy day off of 65. On the east side of 65, closer to the property, 58 to 68, 63 to 73. When we get around to the north side, we don't have much shielding from the land, from the topography. So on the north, northeast corner, we have 56 to 71, 58 to 72, 68. And then on the south, on the far east side, where it's down a little ravine, it drops off to 58 to 70. Now those are outdoor noise levels. If someone's in their house and they have just open windows in the house, you can those noise levels will be about 10 dB less. The windows are closed, about 20 dB less. If you have a home that's masonry, it'd be 25 dBA less. If you have a home that was masonry and you have thermal pane windows, it'd be about 35 dBA less. Next slide, please. What we have here is we're showing you five different cut sections. In other words, imagine a piece of cake, and you slice it down, you look through the side of the cake, you see the first layer, the frosting, the second layer, more frosting, the third layer, more frosting. That's what we're going to do here through the earth. Next slide, please. So closest home is at 518 Blue Ridge. Next slide. So here you have 518 Blue Ridge on the far right-hand side of the slide. There's a ravine, the track, there's the berm that they'll be building, and then the grandstand to the left. So the track is a little bit lower than what the Blue Ridge is, and that berm in there, that provides some mitigation, anywhere from 4 to 5 dB. Next slide, please. Country Farm Estates to the northwest. Next slide. This is at 354 Whitfield Lane. And you can see how the terrain undulates up and down. The track is a little bit below the berm, and then the 354 Whitfield Lane is a little bit higher. And that was the area I talked about on the north and northeast side where we didn't really have much mitigation. Next slide, please. Hidden Oaks, Whitfield Lane. Next slide, please. Now here we have the track and the grandstand. and 354 Whitfield Lane is on the west side. Like I said, in our calcs, we did not have anything in there for the shielding provided by the grandstand. We'll be working on that in the future. Next slide, please. And now over economic development. Tom?
I think in conclusion, we'd like to make a few points. One, that the demographic within 100 miles of Bristol Motor Speedway is 2.2 million people. The Kansas Motor Speedway is 2.4 million people. 100 miles of this track is 1.9 million people. One of the things that we look at is that this is a destination location. The hotels, the restaurants, the existing businesses will be able to automatically receive and take our customers that we bring to these events. So the community is not having to deal with visitors it can't already handle. In fact, if you look at the visitorship and some of the downturn in some of the businesses, we will add business, and we are confident we will bring new visitors to the marketplace. We'll create somewhere over 2,000 jobs through the construction. If you take just the cost of the project and use the Department of Labor figures, or Department of Commerce figures, that for every $92,000, you create one construction job. And so we're somewhere between a quarter of a billion dollars, we're somewhere over 2,000 jobs. Long-term jobs, we will have about 40 people at our project, and full-time plus seasonal employees, and there's be many opportunities for communities, clubs, and events to share, to do work at the racetrack, and earn funds for their projects. One last thing I'd like to close with is, with the exception of the 60 dB noise level, there isn't a single item in the staff recommendations that we would disagree with. So we would accept all those. We would need to negotiate the level on noise monitoring. And we will thank you for right now, and get on with the rest of the comments.
We will have you get at the end so we can ask the questions and things like that. Okay? Thank you. The next presentation is Brian Wade. I don't know what.
I appreciate you letting me talk tonight.
Thanks, Brian.
As you know, I represent Big Cedar and Blue Green Corporation, which are in close proximity to this proposed racetrack. We've got some slides that we brought with us this evening, and I will tell you that we have not had a long time to look at this, approximately 3 weeks, but we put some things together that we think are important for the commission to consider when making its decision about this. The first thing we want to point out is that Big Cedar has been an important part of this community for over 20 years. As you know, it's a destination resort. It's part of the economic engine of this region. It has been recognized as a top resort by the Wall Street Journal, the Southern Living, the Chicago Tribune, and the Springfield News Leader, to name a few. Blue Green is a publicly traded company. It operates over 40 resorts across the country and has more recently committed to this area by partnering with Big Cedar. You will remember that in September of 2009, this commission approved a new development with Big Cedar and Blue Green for an additional 109 acres adjacent to the current Big Cedar development. Together, Blue Green and Big Cedar bring more than 1 million people to our region every year. And the Big Cedar development is within approximately 2 miles of this proposed racetrack. Top of the Rock development, which is currently under construction, is within 3/4 of a mile of the racetrack. Now, we have a map that Eddie Wolf kindly put together for us, and it's hard to see the names or the identifiers on the map. We provided a copy to the commission so you could see those. But what we learned after working with Mr. Wolf is that approximately 50% of the entire Taney County population lives within 10 miles of this proposed racetrack. We also have three of the largest residential developments in Taney County within a few miles of this proposed racetrack. So your decision will implicate and impact half the population of Taney County, the Blue Green and Big Cedar developments, which bring in 1 million guests per year. As you know, the primary reason most people come to Big Cedar is because of, and the primary reason most people come to this area is because of its natural beauty. They come here because of the lakes, the hills, the woods. They visit because of this, but they also take advantage of our shopping, our restaurants, our entertainment, and of course the golf that is now available. As you know, we've become one of the world-class golf destinations. That includes Point Royale, Branson Creek, Thousand Hills, and soon to include Top of the Rock, which we'll show you some slides with Top of the Rock. Now, even though the current economic contributions of Big Cedar and Blue Green are not are substantial, as you know, they're not planning to slow down. Blue Green, and we provided a report to this commission on Friday, and it had attached to it two letters, one from Big Cedar's founder, Mr. Morris, and one from Kevin Butler, who's vice president of Blue Green. They both told you what their anticipated plans are, or some of those plans, and we've got some drawings to show you. Big Cedar and Blue Green Blue Green plans to anticipates $12 to $15 million in proposed development for 2012. Big Cedar's contribution development will be substantial. Carrie has shown you a couple of concept drawings that have been prepared by the world-renowned architect HKS out of Dallas, Texas. Those are projects that will be implemented on the 109-acre project that you previously approved. As you know, Top of the Rock, as I mentioned, is already under construction and hopefully soon will be completed. It's within 3/4 of a mile of the development. It will include, here if you'll go to the Top of the Rock, it will include an 18-hole golf course. It will, of course, have the restaurant, which has been renovated. It will also include a nature museum, which will identify and show us some of the animals that used to roam around Taney County a long time ago. We think that the current development that we have, the future development that we are planning, and the type of people that come to visit our location and also include visiting Branson and other locations will be affected by a racetrack. And if you will juxtapose the current development and the future development of these projects, consider the neighbors, 50% of the population that lives within 10 miles of this proposed residence, and also take a look at the developer who is proposing this. The developer currently has is Mr. Cook and Branson Sports Entertainment. As far as we know, they have no track record of performance, but they do have a track record, as Mr. Atchley mentioned, of skirting permitting requirements and failing to follow through on those requirements. The applicant filed for a permit with you on April 28, 2011. Unfortunately, he had already cleared 50 acres before seeking a permit. The applicant originally claimed that the clearing was agriculturally exempt, and he made a statement to DNR representatives that it was a deer and wildlife preserve, although he told the media that it was for a speedway. DNR investigated the site, and they issued a violation on April 22nd for clearing property without a permit. That violation is in your file. This developer and its owner, Russell Cook, have been involved in the Tanstone project. That's a project at Forsyth Road in Branson. That property was cleared for development, and no further development has occurred. The city of Branson fined the developer $36,000 for exceeding the land permit allowed. The copy to your right is a copy of the stop work order issued by the city of Branson on that project. Mr. Cook and the development group, Tanstone Group, are currently in litigation with Arvest Bank over funding concerning that project. If you look at Tuscany on the Hill, that's another project that Mr. Cook's been involved in. That lies very close to Chateau on the lake. It's another development that has been cleared. The land has been scarred, and no development has occurred. Now, looking at your Taney County Development Code and the application of that code to this particular issue, the first are environmental issues, and Mr. Ailey of Ozark Underground Laboratories and Mr. Coonrod are here, and they represent a neighborhood association, are going to speak to that issue, some of those environmental issues that they have found. One issue that I had not planned to speak about, but Mr. Ashley mentioned, were the height restrictions, height limitations in the code. And this commission was kind enough to allow me to participate in the revisions and amendments of that code concerning height restrictions. It would be difficult, if not impossible, for this commission to approve plans that deviate if they exceed the height restrictions of 70 feet without you receiving plans which specifically identify those to determine whether the amendment or the appropriate conditions apply to that. So I think you were told during the presentation that the grandstand or some part of the development will exceed 70 feet. I did not hear the developer say anything about the light structures, which I assume must go beyond the grandstand and be higher than 70 feet as well. So I'm not sure this commission's in any position to approve any permit until that issue can be resolved to your satisfaction. The biggest issue that we had coming in tonight was the land use compatibility. The area proposed to be developed is entirely surrounded by residential use or residential type use. As you know, a racetrack is incompatible with that use. The HMTB architect gave you some brief information concerning noise and off-site nuisance, and Mr. Ashley correctly pointed out that that is a key factor for the staff in determining what to do here. Previously, you were presented some information on an Emory Creek racetrack, and you received some documents related to decibel level analysis. And to give you some sort of orient the commission, 150 decibels is a level that will cause physical pain for a human ear. 60 decibels is a typical conversation sound level. So some of the decibels are going to fall between 60 and 150 decibels usually. The U.S. Department of Labor subagency OSHA monitors workplace safety. They have a Code of Federal Regulation 29-1926. It identifies acceptable safe decibel levels. It recommends hearing protection at 85 decibels or higher. OSHA can issue a fine to a company for subjecting workers to decibel levels exceeding 90. The National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, that's NIOSH, recommends hearing protection for 85 decibels or higher. The Center for Hearing and Communication is a not-for-profit organization that monitors sound levels and works with deaf communities and deaf groups about hearing protection. And they've identified stock car races at 130 decibels from the point of origin. The New York Times, in an August 26 report, did some analysis at the Bristol Speedway, and they found decibel readings there exceeded 140 decibels during races. I believe, Mr. Jekyll, and I didn't catch it. Did you say the decibel level, your assumption was 105 decibels at the racetrack level, or did you say?
Mr. Wade, we can ask him.
Oh, no, I wanted to verify that he had a level that, okay. Well, assuming there's some decibel level that's projected at the racetrack level, it attenuates by 6 decibels every time you double the distance. So if it starts at 130, it drops by 6 at 50 feet, another 6 at 100 feet, another 6 at 200 feet, so on and so forth. So if you drop 130, if it really is 130, and we don't take into consideration any mitigating factors like the leaves on the tree or the hills, we take a straight line shot, you'll be able to hear the racetrack at up to 10 miles away. It's over 60 decibels. Now, that my simple analysis there does not take into consideration the topography. But that's not my job to tell you what the mitigating factors are. It's the developer's job to tell you that. It's the developer's job to let you know, and to my knowledge, there have been no engineer drawings provided to you that would tell you what the starting point is, what the decibel level would be, and how far it would go. And that's critical for half the population of Taney County, because they're going to be the ones that are being subjected to this potential noise. Now, there's been some talk about the roads, and Carrie, if you'll flip to that. I recently was provided a copy of the MoDOT file. Here it is. And Mr. Cottle, analyzing the services, capacity, and access roads, said at the concept hearing, the interchanges would need to be approved before planning would approve. That's what he said. When I received the MoDOT file, Mr. Zickafoos, who may be here tonight, was stated, just to be clear, MoDOT is not committed or agreed to anything. Everything is still in the preliminary stages of discussion. There are still a lot of unanswered questions that have to be answered before any decisions can be made. So we're nowhere with MoDOT. We are nowhere with what you saw from the developer was a conceptual drawing of proposed interchange improvements. There's nothing on the table with MoDOT. And there was a story in the news leader this morning which identified Governor Nixon vetoing the MoDOT bill concerning a possible opportunity for the developer to pay funds to MoDOT and then have MoDOT build improvements. So that legislation has now been vetoed and is no longer an option. So what I understand, what's left to the developer, is to apply for grant monies. Before that can happen, a traffic study has to be done and some economic development information has to be provided to MoDOT. None of those things have been done. So there is no plan in place and there is no agreement with MoDOT and there are no plans presented to them to make a decision on what the improvements should be. Now, the final thing I'll leave you with is that other racetracks in the region, in the area, and their, let's call it, lack of success. The first one, the most recent one that we heard about was Bolivar, and I don't know if you can see that on the overhead, but the owner of the Bolivar racetrack was quoted as saying that we've been at this for 4 years, and I think 1 year out of the four, we made money running this racetrack. And he finally had to close it down. On a more regional basis, you see the Rockingham Speedway in North Carolina. That particular speedway has been around since the 60s. It was one of the original NASCAR tracks. It recently went out of business and was sold for $4 million at auction. The Memphis Speedway, which is very near us regionally, was sold at auction for $1.92 million. It's out of business. Closer to home, the Gateway Speedway in St. Louis, Missouri, was constructed at a cost of $90 million. It included 150 acres, a drag strip, and an oval track, and it's now out of business. The fact is that large sanctioned bodies like NASCAR are not expanding, they're contracting. There are very successful race car developments near here, which is Kansas and Texas Motor Speedway. We have no information or suggestion to believe that those venues will lose NASCAR races and bring those to Branson. There's been no representation by the developer that it will occur. And in fact, I believe, based on our founder's involvement in that NASCAR area, I think we would know if that were the case. So, combining with what we know about the developer's track record, a lack of transparency concerning how this will be financed, we are likely headed for something like the Hollister Water Park, where there were lots of representations made and lots of exciting things said, and nothing happened. The worst potential outcome of this is if it's going to be half built or half baked, and we're going to end up with a small racetrack that just emits noise and light, it's going to affect 50% of our population in this county. It's going to affect potentially the current and existing economic model that we have, which is inviting 1 million or receiving 1 million guests within a 2.5 mile radius of this racetrack. We can't risk that much on this developer. We don't have enough information to go forward with this project. This project needs to be rejected. If they come up with additional information, if they get an agreement with MoDOT, if they come up with an acceptable explanation to you about how decibel levels can be reduced, then maybe you can consider it. But at this point, it doesn't meet the criteria of the code, neither the relative or absolute conditions, and you have to reject this application. Now, I filed some papers with you, a brief in opposition, in which I've briefly gone through those issues. I just received this afternoon a letter from Joe White of Kanakuk Camps, who spoke in opposition to this proposal as well, and I've attached that to the back of those documents so you can see that. I appreciate you giving us the opportunity to speak tonight and listen to our concerns, and I'll turn it over to Mr. Ailey.
Thank you.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I'm Tom Ailey. I am president of the Ozark Underground Laboratory. We're a contract studies firm, specializes in environmental issues, and we're located in suburban Protam in Taney County. I have a staff of 13. I will be making part of the presentation on behalf of our company, Dave Coonrod, former presiding county commissioner for Greene County, is on my staff now, a great addition to Taney County, by the way, and he will make the remainder of our presentation. We were retained by Country Farm Estates Homeowner Association to evaluate the environmental impacts that this proposed development would have. And I want to go over some of that. You have been provided with written comments from me and also from Dave. I won't go through all of that now. You'll have time to read it. It was in some of the material that was submitted to you as well on Friday. When you look at it, there are some revisions made since Friday, so look at the current ones. Private property rights, in my view, are the core issue here. And half of that issue is allowing landowners appreciable latitude in how they use their land. I own a fair bit of land in Taney County, something like 2,700 acres, and I very much appreciate that. But the other half of the issue is protecting other people's land from intrusions, not from their land, but from other lands. Here in Taney County, we've done a pretty good job in the first half of that, providing plenty of latitude for landowners. We've got to be considered with the other half. And I think that is very well recognized in Taney County's Development Guidance Code. Section 4.4.7 is entitled Annoyances. It says, there shall be no offensive noise, dust, smoke, odors, heat, or glare noticeable at or beyond the property line. I have taken that as a key part of, that's what the code says, will this have those kinds of issues? We are going to address two key questions here. The first, would the racetrack result and significant adverse impacts that would reach beyond the property boundary. And the issues I want to focus on are water issues and noise pollution. And the second question is, are plans in compliance with Taney County Development Code? Is it a compatible land use? And Dave Coonrod will address that. On the water issues, land disturbance permits are required for more than 1 acre, with the agricultural exception. This is not agriculture. You don't have great amounts of blasting going on in agriculture. And you plant stuff and you grow stuff if it's agriculture. I have examined aerial photographs taken of the area that is cleared. And one of the things I used to do was teach photogrammetry and photo interpretation at university levels, did the lab courses. My measurements are 175 acres have now been cleared. I believe Dwayne Braden of Wolf Surveying came up with a number of 165. Whether it's 165 or 175, that's an awful lot more than 75, which is what they had the belated permit for. The stream that drains this area ultimately discharges into Turkey Creek. I examined that stream at its mouth. At that point, it has a watershed area of 3 square miles. Now, of that, some small percent, like 7%, 6%, is the area that has been cleared to date. However, what I observed is there was sediment from storms along that stream, much more sediment than you would find in the adjacent Turkey Creek, into which it discharges just upstream. So it clearly has been discharging appreciable amounts of sediment due to the land clearing and inadequate erosion control that has been going on there. Furthermore, when I examined it last week, there was no flow in the channel. It's draining an area of 3 square miles. That means it is a losing stream. It is losing water into the karst groundwater system. It is that karst groundwater system that supplies springs and wells throughout this region. A good number for Taney County is about 40% of all the water that eventually makes it into our wells enters through the losing stream valleys that we have. So the protection of water quality in those losing stream valleys is extremely important. And the problems one has to deal with are those of sediment, stormwater runoff, racetrack-derived sewage, trash, fuel spills. Relative to the sewage system, the developer hopes to negotiate construction of a major sewage trunk with Taney County. At this point in time, that's simply promotional speculation. I've been working for several years on some major water issues around the Talladega Speedway, not associated with the operation of that speedway. What they do there for sewage is hundreds of porta potties scattered around the landscape. And after a race, there are tons of trash that don't appear in the trash cans that they have on site. They pick it up as quickly as they can, but that takes a few days. If you get a rain, it runs into the streams and you have trash washing off. If you don't have a sewage system in place and have only speculation that maybe you can negotiate something for it, I don't think that's adequate planning for our county. The surrounding properties are dependent upon abundant and clean groundwater, and this operation could impact both of those. Now I'd like to discuss noise briefly. They speak of a 60-foot deep bowl that would send the noise skyward, where I perhaps it would only bother the dearly departed in heaven. I don't know. In reality, it's the headwaters area of a valley and is shaped more like the horn of a megaphone than a bowl that would somehow divert the noise away. As a megaphone, it would be aiming it toward the residences, especially to the north and the northeast. And that's where the clients who have retained us live. We drove around and counted the number of houses within about 1.5 miles of the edge of the cleared area. And we came up with 204 residents. That's an awful lot of people, an awful lot of houses. Some of them are very close. Plus, to that number is Top of the Rocks Golf Course, which by my measurements is about 4,000 feet away, plus Big Cedar and all that development, which is within 2 miles. There's a statement I would call to your attention in the proponent's materials. Quote, there are no conflicts with adjoining land uses as the property is relatively isolated. Adjoining residential areas to the north and east will be separated from the development by distance and by maintaining the existing natural vegetation buffer that will be left undisturbed. That is clearly false. You can see the land that has been denuded from the road on the north side. If there were all this vegetation and stuff separating it, you wouldn't be able to see it. It's line of sight. My conclusion, noise levels that will significantly interfere with the private property rights of landowners to use and enjoy their properties must be expected to extend outward for at least 2.5 to 4 miles and possibly much further. Last Saturday, I was in Talladega working on the project around that racetrack when they were doing some test runs. I was out in the cotton field. It was very hot there. Felt a lot like it does here today. At the closest point, in other words, when the car was probably one, maybe two cars, when it was closest to me, it was 4,800 feet. When it was furthest away, it was 10,400. So in round numbers, that's 1 or 2 miles. The noise never diminished to levels where conversation could be carried on without directly facing the other person. I was out there with a client. You know, normally you're walking along, you can talk to them at your side. We couldn't do that. And I commented on the noise, and he said, oh, this is nothing. You should see it when they have a race. Well, that experience was convenient for me because it nicely confirms my conclusion. We have got to expect significant interference for people living up to 2.5 and maybe 4 miles away. Furthermore, I would never consider buying a house at a location such as where I was in that cotton patch. And even if I did, and even at a significant discount, my wife wouldn't move in with me. Okay, I would like to leave you with three recommendations. First, the special use permit for this project must be denied as an incompatible land use. Second, the developer must be required to revegetate all lands that he disturbed without a valid land disturbance permit and for a use that is not agricultural. The revegetation and sediment control work must be conducted in a manner that will prevent future unnatural sediment transport into the groundwater system and surface waterways. This revegetation and sediment control work is essential for the protection of water quality in Turkey Creek and in Lake Taneycomo. Such revegetation and sediment control work may be enforceable under provisions of the Federal Clean Water Act and perhaps other federal and state laws. And third, permitting land disturbance for non-agricultural purposes under the guise that such activities are agricultural is improper and must stop. The agricultural exemption is warranted for agriculture, but as a major agricultural landowner in this county, I can envisage public outrage over misuse of the exemption resulting from cases like this, and that could harm farmers. We don't want to do that. Thank you very much, and Dave Coonrod will continue.
Thank you. Mr. Coonrod?
Well, first of all, good evening, everyone. And before I do anything else, having sat on the other side of the dais, I want to thank all of you for your service to Taney County. I know how difficult it is to keep everyone happy, so you have my sympathies. I'm going to try to answer two questions. One, are the racetrack plans in compliance with the Taney County Development Code? I don't think they are. And secondly, is the proposed racetrack compatible land use given its location and existing land use of the surrounding neighborhoods? First of all, the racetrack plans are not in compliance with the Taney County Development Guidance Code, and here's why. Land disturbance was initiated on site prior to obtaining proper permits. More land was disturbed than was requested in their land disturbance permit. The proponents failed to comply with Appendix I of the code requirements prior to the land disturbance. They should have had the following. They should have the following plans. They should have had in place and approved by the staff a sediment and erosion control plan, a stormwater management plan, and a revegetation plan. Those all have to be authorized first before you get a land disturbance plan. The best analogy I can give is we typically don't get a driver's license to drive a car after we've had a car wreck. You know, you think about that a little bit. However, when public scrutiny began to unfold on this site prior to the submission of appropriate plans or getting the permit release, the property owner, Mr. Russell Cook, claimed he was exempt, as Mr. Ailey just mentioned, he was exempt from the code because his activities were agricultural. I want to just share with you something that you probably already know, but it's a very brief definition of agriculture. In the code, it defines agriculture as the production, keeping, or maintenance for sale or lease or personal use of plants and animals useful to man. Well, I haven't seen any evidence of that yet on the site, if in fact it was an agricultural activity. The real problem I have, having been a public official myself before, a locally elected official, is that we had some public officials intervene on behalf of the owner, Mr. Cook, and what that did was inhibit your staff from exercising their due diligence in protecting the citizens of Taney County and enforcing the rules and regulations that had been approved. The second part I want to address is the compatible land use. It's my opinion that and the opinion of our company that the proposed racetrack is indeed incompatible and conflicts with surrounding land use. Furthermore, we believe this project would be unsustainable, especially given the landowner's track record, which Mr. Wade has articulated already, and the current failure rate of NASCAR-sanctioned racetracks, which has also been articulated. One point I want to make with respect to the Taney County Master Plan, which really hasn't been touched on very much, the master plan in and of itself. I have a degree, a bachelor's degree in environmental geology and a master's degree in land use planning. And what I always learned was and have practiced as I was on staff with Greene County as a planner before I became an elected official is that everything you do as a commission has to be based on your master plan. That is your roadmap, your guide. And the master plan has an interesting statement about land use. It says that the goal, the land use section 7, has the following goal, that we should encourage a pattern of growth that is compatible with the available level of infrastructure and other public services that protects the quality of life in the Taney County community, that is sensitive to protecting the natural environment and that preserves the rural landscape. It is the overall intent to encourage sustainable growth and development in Taney County that does not diminish the quality and character of the natural environment and can be readily supported or served by public resources and services. As you've heard, Governor Nixon took some action this morning that was interesting with respect to this case and his veto of a piece of legislation that Representative Long had proposed, in part would have provided some funding assistance, some cost share money for the development of the three interchanges that we've seen on the display before. Brian said, we're going nowhere with MoDOT. My quote would be, MoDOT is no help. They're out of money. They're already laying off 1,200 people. They have had to shut down their remote service sites that are existing all through District 8 and beyond. And it's just fantasy to think that MoDOT would be of any help in this project. The real problem that that I think we all share with this is that the applicant has essentially sought forgiveness rather than permission, as he's willfully denuded hundreds of acres of woodlands. And we've just heard from staff that the applicant will now amend their land disturbance permit. That's news to me tonight. I thought we had everything together right now. Just in summary, I want to read a final statement to you, if I may. And it's in the report that Mr. Ailey mentioned that we have submitted to you for consideration as you deliberate this for your final decision next Monday night. The Taney County Planning Commission has the opportunity here tonight to right a wrong that has been thrust upon the area neighborhoods. It's a chance to take a stand to proclaim enough is enough. When it comes to the misuse and abuse of natural resources inherited by this community, we all have a duty and a stewardship responsibility to take care of it for future generations. And I don't want to sound Pollyanna, but think about your kids and your grandkids. They've got to inherit something, and it shouldn't be a wasteland that was created by an individual that has, quite frankly, a horrible track record. And then I'd also ask you to please give due consideration to the health, safety, and general welfare of this promising area in southwest Taney County. Your decision will set a precedent, both now and for the future. Two recommendations I have for you. First, that the special use permit they've applied for be denied, as it is in conflict with the provisions of the Taney County Master Plan. And secondly, and I don't mean to ruffle any feathers, but I really do believe that the Taney County Commission should take action in concert with the Taney County Commission to ensure that their administrative staff are not interfered with by elected office holders as they conduct their lawful duties on behalf of the citizenry. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I think we have one more PowerPoint left, and that's Keith Crawford. Keith, you have a PowerPoint, right? I moved you up so we could go ahead and get those. So if you would come on up. The speaker right after Keith will be Loanne Barter. So obviously we're a long way from over, so we're going to try to move these along as quickly as we can. So if Loanne can maybe just come up here and sit on this, and that way we don't have people coming through the crowd, and we can just move on from one to the next. There's an empty chair right up here in front. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Keith Crawford. I live at 230 Sandy Lane, Hollister. I'm within a half-mile radius of the proposed complex, and actually I have probably one of the better views of it at this point. I'll try to move through this quickly. I'm going to focus on the racing noise, but really it's any noise, concerts, anything else that's going to generate a loud noise. And, of course, something that never seems to get mentioned, but a PA system that usually for any event has to overpower whatever is going on in the background so the announcements can be heard by the crowd. Next. Just one little piece of background. National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health, NIOSH, reported that the noise level of 43 cars during a NASCAR race was, quote, equivalent to a jet engine. So just to put that into perspective. And actually, they did not include the impact of what the PA system had that had to overpower those 43 cars. Next. Very quickly, just some basic sound levels to try to put this into perspective. In a rural area, in fact, the area where we live around this track, in your house, about 30 to 38 decibels, which is very quiet. normal conversation, 3 feet, if I'm 3 feet from you having a conversation, 50 to 60 decibels. Running a vacuum cleaner in your living room, about 70 decibels. A jet engine, 130 decibels, basically the length of a football field away. And 3 to 5 feet, really, 150 decibels at a rock concert away from the speaker system. And just to clarify thing, of course, the decibel scale is not linear, it's logarithmic, like the Richter scale. When you, I think Mr. Wade mentioned it, you know, you double the sound, you increase it 6 decibels, you don't go from like 30 to 60. So every 6 decibels is a doubling of the sound level. Next. What I heard in the concept meeting and the neighborhood meeting was that this proposed track configuration to help control the sound, and we've heard this already tonight, is going to be in this bowl-shaped configuration to help contain the sound. There'll be metal stands for the seating around, and of course, who knows what else, concrete and so forth. Next. Bristol Motor Speedway happens to be the same configuration. It's a bowl-shaped track. It has metal stands for seating. Next. And the NIOSH report said they measured peak levels of 104 decibels at 150 feet from the Bristol Motor Speedway. The sound level, they said, quote, is due to its bowl-shaped layout, small track size, metal-constructed stands that reverberate and amplify the noise generated by the stock cars. And it is known as the noisiest track on the NASCAR circuit. So my point is the configuration, we're talking the same thing. So in conclusion, as far as what the proposed track configuration is, a bowl-shaped track with metal stands, slope sides, is going to bounce sound all around in all directions, just like putting a mirror, a bunch of mirrors around on a slope and shining lights in it. The loudest sounds that will come out of this are in the frequency range when the human ear, where the human ear is the most sensitive. There will also be low-frequency sounds or rumble from exhaust systems on cars, and that will emanate in all directions. And most cars and stock car racing and so forth don't run muffler systems or very minimal. And those low frequencies, if you think about the cars that have the loud stereos that go boom, 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 you hear it in every direction. There are also going to be the sounds of the crowd, people yelling and screaming for their favorite car. Then, of course, as I mentioned, there's the sound system of the announcer trying to overcome all of that volume. This has to go somewhere. And all that sound is going to bounce off metal seats, it's going to bounce off the pavement, it's going to bounce off the cars, and it's going to go out into the air. Next. Noise level on Crawford's deck and yard. That's my yard and deck. The ambient sound level where I am is typically in the low 40 decibel range. It is quiet. I bought where I did because it was quiet, and I had what we called a million-dollar view that now is about a $10 view because of all the trees being gone. Stock car races are projected to be in the upper 60s, lower 70s, and I spoke with Mr. Jacob about that. He gave me the numbers, and I calculated pretty much the same thing. That's approximately 5 times louder than our normal ambient background level and 3 times louder than normal conversation. So if my wife and I are sitting in the backyard on our deck and a large stock car race is going on, we're going to have to compete just to talk to each other. Another thing, noise carries a long way when you live in a hollow. From the track to where I live, there's a nice hollow. That's where Turkey Creek is. And when I hear something about we're going to leave the natural vegetation
Mr.
along
Crawford,
Turkey.
Yes. When you're face us when you're not reading the thing, please.
Oh, yeah,
thank
I'm
you.
Reading it. We live in this hollow, and just the equipment that's been moving the land, the sound travels right down this hollow, two hills, one on each side, like a V, and it just funnels that sound right into my backyard. When they have a piece of equipment running out there, when they were moving land, it sounded like it was in my backyard. And there's no real way to attenuate that sound coming down through the hollow. It's going to reverberate off the hills and just bounce all around. It's in a one term in acoustics, it's a free field type thing where sound just emanates from this point source, and actually the reverberated sound can be almost as loud as the original sound. Next. Traffic noise. There's going to be noise coming from the cars in the parking lots and on those roads leading out of the property. Slamming of car doors, horns blowing after the event, you know, people trying to get out, people yelling and screaming about, you know, about who won, who lost, so forth. The traffic noise, as we hear, if we have thousands, tens of thousands of people going in and out, I can't even imagine how long it's going to take to clear out that parking lot. And we have to listen to that noise going in and out. And honestly, there's no way to abate that noise. I hear about trees being a barrier. Trees are not really going to act much of a sound barrier, especially in the winter when the leaves fall off of them. I don't want to get into much in it, but really to abate the sound, they really have to get the sound controlled at its source, not try to put trees up around in the woods and say that's going to take care of it. Next, please. Land use compatibility. In the Taney County Code, I just pulled out a few things here. It says that, you know, these policies encourage land use compatibility, and that's what we're talking about. Where it cannot be demonstrated that a potential off-site nuisance will be acceptably mitigated, development generating the nuisance should be discouraged. And that's what we are working towards here. And obviously, you know, your responsibility is to determine if a property change is compatible with a residential area. Next, comparison to other racetracks. We've heard, of course, Bristol Motor Speedway, and I picked out another one, Texas Motor Speedway in Dallas-Fort Worth, among others, exist in heavily populated areas that are already noisy. We are rural. We are very quiet. Adding more noise to an already noisy area will be significantly less noticeable to the human ear than adding a noise to a quiet area. As an example, if I had everybody in this room start clapping, it would be a loud noise. And if I started clapping on top of it, you probably wouldn't hear much of it. That's the point here. If this room is totally quiet and I started to clap, you would hear it very loudly. Again, the point is to take an analogy of saying, we got Bristol Motor Speedway and all these other speedways that are right in these heavily populated areas, and, you know, that's great. But again, the background noise of these heavily populated areas exists 24 hours a day. Cars, sirens, door slamming, people. Adding another noise to it, honestly, is not a big deal. You take an area where the daytime noise level may creep up in the low 50s, but at nighttime in the low 40s, a car goes down my street, a horn blows, and it sends you out of your chair because it's such a loud noise compared to the background. When a gentleman earlier made a comment about the area, and of course we have an airport, yes we do, and having a recording studio in my backyard, I was upset when an airport went in. Didn't turn out to be so bad, but there's one big difference. A plane takes off, a minute later, it's quiet. A race starts and goes for 4 hours. It really is not fair to compare the two at all. Next. So conclusion I'm trying to get to is similar to what you just heard. When you take it all into account that you're trying to, the plan is to drop this loud, noisy complex into a rural area that is quiet 24/7, 365. There's no way to justify at all that it's compatible. And one last thing. I know there was a decision of record made for the Emery Creek project. In fact, I was involved in a lot of that at the time. And there was a sound level specification that was thrown out and approved. And at the time, I couldn't say anything. But all I will say right now is that level was, I don't know where it came from. It was very erroneous, and I think it was taken from a misinterpretation. The other thing I recommend to the board is as sound levels may be presented to you, there's one common way of specifying sound that's called a day-night sound level, DNL, which is an averaging of sound over a period, typically of 24-hour period. And just taking the average, that's like saying, well, we had
11 months where we had no rain, and 1 month we had 5 inches of rain. Well, that 1 month, 5 inches was a lot of rain, but over the year, that averages out to almost nothing. That's what the day-night sound level is. Again, we're very quiet, so 23 hours of the day, it's very quiet. 1 hour, there's a loud noise. It averages out, it sounds like, and it, again, you measure it as an average, it doesn't seem like it's a big deal, but for that 1 hour, it's a big deal. What's more important is the single event noise level, noise exposure level. This is a metric that's very important that has takes into account the maximum noise level and the duration of the noise event. So, I also, as you know, left you what I did some calculations of projected sound levels that based upon the NIOSH numbers as far as the racing and what at different distances what the sound levels would be. I appreciate if you could review that and reference that to specific landmarks and also common sounds like the vacuum cleaners and clothes washers, just to help you and put it into perspective.
Okay.
Any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, it looks like we've got Loanne Barter next, and then I think it's Terry Sookman. I'm not sure, but that's what I think it says. Hold it. There you go. If did you turn that? See if it's on. You may have turned it back off.
It's on.
There we go.
Doesn't
Thank you.
Say, it doesn't say off now.
Okay.
Okay. My name is Loanne Barter. I'm a realtor with Carol Jones Realtors, and I would like to read you some excerpts from three letters that we have received in our office. The first one is from a realtor that lives in Kansas, right next to Kansas Speedway. All I can tell the citizens of Taney County and your local government is that Kansas Speedway has been a huge catalyst for development and change in Kansas City, Kansas. Our community for years was considered the stepchild of the metropolitan area with high taxes, high crime statistics, a lack of commercial development, and a mass exodus of our young people moving to the more affluent Johnson County. Then Kansas Speedway came along and changed everything. We now have a major retailing shopping center directly across the street with notable names as Cabela's, Nebraska Furniture Mart, and many others. The Legends Outlet Mall has become a headline destination and a must-see for those who visit Kansas. Just last month, the Sporting Kansas City Major League Soccer Stadium opened and is host to incredible soccer events. Located directly behind the Legends is the new plaza at the Speedway shopping area with even more shopping choices and restaurant venues. None of this would ever have been possible without Kansas Speedway. I currently live less than a mile from Kansas Speedway in the same house I lived in before it was ever built. I was asked by our mayor in 97 to serve on a group of private citizens to travel to Daytona Beach, Florida, and see what it would be like to live in a community with a Speedway. Myself and seven other citizens representing various groups went to Daytona Beach and met with their city leaders, school district, fire and police, and asked them what it was like to live and work next to something like this of this magnitude. The answers were always the same. The Speedway was great for their communities. Everyone agreed that during racing week, things were busy but manageable. We also went into the neighborhoods and knocked on doors and asked the residents what it was like up to and including race day. Everyone we spoke to said it was very fun atmosphere in town. They'd have race parties, and in general, everyone enjoyed and bought their homes knowing that they were living just minutes from Daytona International Speedway. We met with school district officials that echoed what we had heard all the others and said the biggest challenge they have is keeping the kids in school when they'd rather be at the Speedway. Next, we talked to small business owners who were dependent upon the race for huge spikes in their revenues. They also commented that the race fans were very loyal, upbeat, and were fun to have in their establishment, and were new dollars coming into their businesses. Noise is the other big topic, and again, you can hear the cars. For about 3.5 hours on Saturday and Sunday, you can hear a slight vroom vroom, but that's about it. If you're sitting on your deck, you have to listen for it. It's not obtrusive, it doesn't spoil your day, and it doesn't have... And if you have kids playing in the neighbors or someone mowing the yard, you can't hear the cars. It's actually easier to hear one car on the track than it is to hear all 43 on race day. And that's because you have 1,000 fans sitting inside to help absorb the noise. even when they are testing. It's only a slight noise. Again, nothing that intrudes on your day. I could go on and on about Kansas Speedway, ISC, and what it's done for our community, but I just can't convey on paper what a blessing it's been for Wyandotte County. I have another one here, and I don't think I'll need my 5 minutes to finish up here.
Okay.
It says, I can give some brief information, and if you need more, just let me know. We have lived in our current home since 2003, and this is written by someone that lives in Newton, Iowa. They began construction of the racetrack in 2005, and everybody thought they were crazy for building there. Now everyone is envious of us and tells us how lucky we are to be to live here. First of all, we don't have to fight the traffic on race days, and some days somebody may want to buy us out for a whole lot of money. Our home actually sits right across the road from the track. Our front porch faces the grandstand. We don't mind the race weekends at all because the beauty of it is that we don't have to get in any of the traffic. It's fun to watch the activities and all the people. My husband and I are not big race fans, so we don't go to a lot of the races, but we do enjoy the social aspect of it. We have lots of friends that come out and camp at our place for the weekend. The Iowa Speedway staff is great to us, and we truly enjoy having a state-of-the-art venue like this in Newton. It really has helped our economy. And this is one from someone else by the Iowa Speedway. We live in Newton, Iowa, and our house is located very near the racetrack. Before the track came, we were concerned that it would be a problem for us because we are so close. Since the track has opened, we have not had any problems related to it that have been bad. The only thing we try to avoid is coming or going when the race is over, as traffic is heavy for about an hour. We thought that maybe our property would be wanted to be purchased for commercial reasons, but nothing has happened in that matter yet. Possibly as the track grows, that may happen. The noise is not bad at all. Because the track sits down kind of like in a valley, it seems to buffer the loudness of the cars. We have had concerts at the track in the early years, and I remember thinking, great, a free concert, but we could barely hear the music and not any of the singing. Life has not changed for us because of the track, and some of the businesses in town have better sales when the race is on. And as a realtor, I would just like to say that I know how these folks feel behind me, and I feel badly for them. But we need it for our economy. It's definitely going to help to put Branson back on the map and just give us a little bit more income and a little bit more diversity, too.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Sookman, and then after that we'll have Connie Crawford. I think she's turned the switch. Just turn it back on there, Terry.
I'm Tara Sookman, and I'm with the Tea Party Patriot headquarters in Branson, Missouri. I realize that there are many here who oppose this venture. We are here to support the many jobs that Branson Sports Entertainment Complex will create. This project seems to be going out of its way to meet and comply with all the regulations and maybe even exceed them. I do agree that they need to all be met. We in Branson and Taney County need to create an environment for people to succeed. Do you think success is an employment rate of 10.6 to 22.4, which Branson has? This year, that's what they've had. Exceeding even the national average, which is horrible, a 9.2%. And that's just people who are filing, not those who have actually given up hope. This project will create hundreds of year-round jobs, and Branson needs to be a year-round town. As far as noise, this facility will be 60 feet deep in a bowl shape. Sound goes up, not out. Sewers plan to hook onto the central collection at the Hollister Municipal Wastewater Treatment Facility that provides an opportunity for unsewered facilities in that area a chance to connect. Portable water will come from a state and federally approved central on-site system. Stormwater will be treated through an approved stormwater management and erosion control plan. A large portion of the parking is even on grass. The sound, I tell you what, when people compare this to other tracts, each tract, large or small, past or present, have their own business models and their own strengths and weaknesses. To make a general statement that infers the weaknesses or shortcomings of other tracts that are shared by this facility is simply not accurate and not fair. Such problems have been reviewed and are being assessed. The coordination to make traffic flow correctly and smoothly with a shared cost of private and state and local money combined to accomplish this is amazing for our state. These areas now are very dangerous to cross. I have to cross them with land that has no future. This construction will provide jobs and create an infrastructure for many other businesses to accommodate sports fans, eating, drinking, and necessary maintenance businesses, and the future is unending. This is not gambling. Cities without an enhanced enterprise zone study will never bring in big business to our area. This creates jobs. When you accomplish this, you are in line, like Springfield Airport, to be an international trade zone. That brings jobs to the United States of America, not out of the United States of America to China. Plus, this opens a door for a rail system to be extended to bring in large motors for cars as well as aircraft engines, which helps our airport. I do not feel like some that have a bias in this sports entertainment complex with the interference of the Branson Theaters. On the contrary, this is a different demographic from which the theaters will benefit. The only common thread I see between these groups of people are that they are patriotic and they say the Pledge of Allegiance before every event. And we want this kind of patriotic visitor and these kinds of jobs.
Thank you. Next is Connie Crawford, and then after that it'll be George Christofferson. Turn that back on.
You think I'd know that, Windsor? One thing I'd like to know is there was listed in the paper that there was a cease and desist order on Russell Cook doing work. All this week, he has been doing work. Today, he was doing work. Saturday night, I was up till 3 waiting for Keith to come home, and there was work going on after midnight. He never did abide by the 7-to-7 construction rule when he... That was before he had the permit, and even after he got the permit, he never, ever abided by that 7-to-7. He would detonate. He detonated land, dynamite, whatever, to the point where we got cracks in our drywall. And I think it's interesting. I would like to know why Russell Cook himself is not here tonight, if this is his project and he wants to do good by everybody and take everybody's concerns into notice. Why is he not here to discuss things and to hear the people actually have their concerns? And as far as I know, since the cease and desist order is in effect, he may not even win that lawsuit, and then this is all null and void, because if it goes somewhere else, then the people back Fruit Farm Road and Whitfield and everything, Big Cedar is not concerned. So I don't like doing this.
You're doing fine.
And in California, we lived in a house that, as the crow flies, was 3 miles away from Saugus Speedway. And it was not as, it was a neighborhood, a suburban neighborhood with house after house after house. And at night when we would be in the jacuzzi, and they had the races at Saugus Speedway, we could see the light reflecting from the clouds and hear the cars. That is actual experience. That is not theoretical. That is not taking something out of a book and saying you should or you shouldn't hear it. Been there, done that. You can hear it. It's not as loud as if you sit and watch TV, the Monster Jam trucks, but it's loud. We've also lived someplace where it was a tourist destination. We had to have decals on our windshields to get in versus the snow bunnies. And yes, we had decals. However, you still had to wait in line to get passed through because it would be a line of people that wanted in, that had to put snow chains on, etc. So even though we had the decal that would let us through, we still had to sit in line with all the snow bunnies and wait for them to argue with the police whether they could go or not. In Scottsdale, we've lived a lot of places. In Scottsdale, we almost bought a house that had a dry canal behind it, a flood control canal. And then they had a high school football field. Didn't give it a thought till we went over there at night during football season, and it was like broad daylight in the person's backyard. And we're talking a big, I mean, I don't know if y'all know Phoenix and their flood channels, but they are 300 feet wide. So, and then you add a football field in. So the light does glare, and yes, it's worse if it's cloudy. And I worry about the parking on the grass of the visitors because all cars leak oil. They leak antifreeze. And it's going to go into the soil. And when it rains, it's going to be washed into the soil and it's going to go into the water. It would be better if it was concrete, but then we'd have more noise. And there's been a lot of numbers thrown out about numbers of jobs. We've heard 2,000, we heard 100, we've heard 20, we've heard 30, we've heard 40. It's going to be in there somewhere. But is it worth destroying 204 families' lives for maybe 20 full-time jobs, which I don't think the top jobs are going to be filled by people who live here, because nobody here has any track experience to actually run the track. So they're going to have to import somebody to run the track correctly. So the jobs that are left to us are the food concessions, the janitorial, the $8 an hour jobs, part-time, no benefits. Again, I don't think it's worth ruining people's lives. We all bought back there for the reason it was quiet. If the racetrack had already been in there and then we bought, so be it. You knew the racetrack was there. You bought it with that noise. We all bought back there because it's quiet. It's quiet enough to have a music studio. The racetrack is going to ruin it. Entire standard of living is gone. You notice Russell Cook is not going to be living back there. In fact, I asked where he's going to be living because he's not going to live near there. If it wasn't such a problem, why can't he live back there if he thinks it's no big deal? I mean, seriously. And he's not even here to talk to us. He's not even here to answer questions. He flaunts he thumbs his nose at everybody because he develops way more land or he starts cutting down way more acreage and burning trees. Then he gets a permit. Then he goes and over the limit. He's got a horrible reputation, you saw. And he's already ruined the view. There's nothing he can do except make it worse.
Okay. Thank you. George Christofferson. And I have no idea who the next one is. I think it's Rasmussen. Is there somebody by that name here? Okay.
Is it on? Okay. I am not related to Chris. Get that out of the way.
Okay.
I should be opposing this track because I live at 65 and Highway 265. When I say I live at that location, I am on the corner. if they come through and put in the clover leaf, I will look out my backyard to that distance, and I will be overlooking concrete, because all of the trees behind my house now belong to the state. On the other side of me, it's all Highway 65. Again, I'm going to be sitting out there wide open. Every single truck that goes by all day long with a Jake brake to stop at the stop sign or the stoplight rumbles louder than any of the cars that are going to be in this racetrack. I've heard experts say that leaves on trees don't mean an awful lot. They do to me, because once spring is here, I hardly hear the Jake brakes at all. We have so much traffic at that corner. So anyway, I should be opposing the track, but I'm not. Today at about 4:30, the youngest member of my family was born. I'm here. I should be at the hospital meeting my new grandchild. But I'm here because I think this is important for our children and our grandchildren. We need jobs. And if it means somebody has to put up with noise for 3 hours or 4 hours a week or a month, I do it every day, and it doesn't bother me. You get used to it. I was born, raised next to a railroad track, main line. I heard trains all day, all night. After a couple of weeks, it put me to sleep. There's a chance for this commission to help this county. But the people from the racetrack have to meet all of your requirements. But I support it totally if they meet the requirements. And that's all I've got to say. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Rasmussen, am I close? Okay, very good. After that, it'll be Harold Huffman.
I want to thank the commission for allowing me the time to speak tonight. I'm not a real highly educated person. I had a high school education, but I got 75 years almost of common sense. And common sense to me says, if we can get a function into an area to kind of make some money for the county, I think it's a win situation. Sure, we're going to have a little bit of noise, but it's not going to be any more noise than they have on 76. It's not going to be really any more noise than the airport has, either one of the two airports. And it's not going to be any more noise than I have 150 foot from my house, which is Highway 76, south of Bull Shoals Bridge. We have, excuse me. You've got Silver Dollar City, which has a major, major traffic problem. Everybody has accepted it because it's there. But when it takes you 2.5 hours to go 3 miles, that's something that the county should have looked into, I think. Big Cedar Lodge, it's a fine facility, but I'm sure that the people that were in the area before that was built feel the same way about Big Cedar as they did about the racetrack. They were against Big Cedar. Well, Big Cedar is maybe working their way out of some problems. But we have to give other ventures a chance also. You got to remember, country music in Branson is not going to be around for a lot of years. You're going to have to come in with something else to keep the revenue coming into Taney County. And There was an example made earlier by a speaker when he put his arm straight out and said, the noise is right out there. Yeah, but it's 70 foot above the noise is where he was indicating, and the noise don't go that direction. The noise goes up. You'll have more noise in the Branson, the new Branson Airport, for those people in that area as more and more airlines come into the Branson area, and it becomes an international airport, and it won't be in the next 10 years probably, but we have to look, and you folks have to look. You can't have 100% the way you want it as we're going to grow in Taney County. I've lived around racetracks. I've worked around racetracks. Yes, there are some that are noisy. They pointed Bristol out. Bristol is an old track. The plans that I've seen on this new facility is going to implement many, many better noise eliminators than what any of these other racetracks have had because they're the old style. I came from Des Moines, Iowa. The Newton track there put that part of the state on the map. And as far as water runoff, they've got plenty of things in place to handle any of the water runoffs so that we don't have a pollution of Turkey Creek, and we don't have any pollution of Taney County, Taney Como. And so I see that it's nothing but a plus situation for the economy and for the taxpayers of Taney County. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Harold Huffman is who we have next, and then Lawrence Kluckow, I believe. I want to remind everybody, I know we've got a lot of people to go still, and try to keep your, obviously, if we want to make sure that we've heard any points of view, but if it's already been said, which you think we've been said, it's been conveyed to us, you can also let us know that, but try to keep it as brief as possible, because we've got a long way to go. We're not even done with the first page.
I'm Harold Huffman. I'm an electrical contractor in the area. A little over a year ago, I laid every one of my people off. Every one of the contractors I know personally have had to make deep cuts to their employees. This, I believe, is an opportunity to get the jobs back to our employees, to the community. And that was one of the biggest things I was just wanting to say, was that I was for this just for the fact that it will create jobs. Now, in listening to some of the comments, I would like to make a couple more points that have come up. I've known Russell Cook for over 20 years. I've heard he's had a poor track record. Well, if being one of the original excavating companies at Big Cedar is a poor track record, then I guess I don't know what one would be. Top of the Rock Golf Course, Branson Creek. He has been involved in some of the biggest projects in the area. The two things that we were shown on there being Tanstone and the Forsyth project, things happened that were beyond his control. I wouldn't say that was a poor track record, just things happened. I just honestly believe this will be an opportunity for us to turn this around. I've got four kids, three of them which work with me now. We've had to change what we do for a living somewhat because the construction was not there. I enjoy golf. I enjoy going down to Big Cedar. I work at a lot of the resorts here cleaning carpets now. But when you've got as many construction workers as we've got out of work right now, the golf courses, the resorts that don't have new rooms coming up aren't cutting the job. We need something new, something that will bring the tax revenue in and will bring jobs. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Lawrence Kluckow. I know some folks have left, so I don't. If I don't see from him pretty quick, we'll move on. Lawrence? Ken Boltz? Is Ken here? Okay, and after that it would be Diane Houston, I think, maybe. I think it's on, Ken.
Is it on?
Yeah.
My name is Ken Boltz. I'm a resident here of Taney County. At the concept meeting, when this proposal was first talked about 2 months ago here, there was mention made of approximately 2,500 jobs being created, both construction and some, of course, being permanent jobs in the racetrack. And things that were mentioned, one of the things mentioned was we would, of course, need lodging for the workers. Well, if you hire local, they've already got a home. We don't need lodging for them. I hope if this project goes, every effort will be made to hire local. Obviously, we need the jobs. Another thing that was mentioned at the concept hearing was repeatedly was mentioned about how this would be a family entertainment type of a facility. What I have not heard mentioned is whether or not alcohol will be allowed at this facility. Will it be brought in? Will it be allowed to be sold? If so, I don't know how that jives with family entertainment. Certainly sitting 2-3 hours, whatever, at a racetrack in the hot sun drinking beer, then you get out on the road on our wonderful hilly roads to get home. I'm not sure that's something we want to see. And like I said, I've heard no mention of whether or not there will be alcohol. Just today at noon on the news, we heard mention of the fact that Arkansas would be interested in having a racetrack if it didn't happen here. Well, that sounds to me a bit like a scare tactic, something like what Arkansas did when we were trying to get gambling into Rockaway Beach. They said, well, we'll take it down there. Well, I don't want to hear stuff like that, but that's what we heard just today. As far as the noise, I have personal experience there that goes back 40 years. I bought a home in southwest St. Louis County. 5 miles away is a place called Valley Park, located down on the Merrimack River. The racetrack there raced on Sunday night. That terrain, that whole area is hills, much like what we have here. The first Sunday night I lived there, in this big house that had no air conditioning, I had all the windows open. 8 o'clock, I heard a noise. I couldn't figure out what it was. I stepped outside. I could hear it quite a bit better. It was the first race starting, 5 miles away through the hills. Buddy, I heard it. Don't tell me if you put it down in a bowl that it's going to go up. It goes all over. As far as shopping and so forth, that you know, retail and everything that will happen if this comes, well, we've got an awful lot of empty shopping buildings sitting in this area already. You know, and I don't know how we're going to fill them. I mean, I don't know how this racetrack is going to do it. As far as you know, a lot of mention has been made of preserving the natural beauty. What I will say about that is, Branson is not built in the middle of the Kansas prairie. It's built here in the Ozarks. Part of the experience of coming here is driving through these beautiful hills. We owe succeeding generations to keep that for them. This racetrack does not add to that. Right by the highway for everybody to see. We're going to run out of hills. God ain't making any more of them. We got to stop messing with them. We need to keep this area. I understand we need jobs. I don't know where they're to come from, but I don't see this racetrack as being compatible with what we have in the Branson area. Thank you.
Thank you. Diane? And then after that, I've got Don Everly.
Hi there. I don't live in Taney County. I live in Omaha, Arkansas. But I've worked in Branson area my entire adult life. This project will bring jobs. I alone have been unemployed for 19 months, and let me tell you, it's not easy to make ends meet on an unemployment check. We need the jobs, and we need this project. Thank you.
Thank you. Don, and then I had actually Karen and Jack Tobin sign up together. So, Karen or Jack?
Anyway, my name is Don Everly, and I live at 535 Fruit Farm Road. And I agree with everything that's been said in opposition. Thank you.
Thank you. Karen, is Jack also going to speak? Or?
No.
Okay, thank you.
My name is Karen Tobin, and for 23 years, I worked for a premier builder developer in California. Over a period of nearly 40 years, they produced the master plan community of Valencia, California. One of the most important considerations in that process throughout those years was how every quote-unquote improvement would affect the neighborhoods and the future generations. Only light industry was allowed to develop and grow to protect the dignity of the various communities. And the industry was in direct compatibility with residential development there. In the early years, care had to be taken to put in sound-resistant glass in the various homes that affronted the roads because of the incredible noise. It was a hilly country, and it still is. They had to protect the quietude that people need to have to enjoy their home time. I'm asking you, please, to consider again the noise from just the general public, not only from their cars and trucks, but just in general. Consider, if you will, the trash, sewage, gas spills that is generated from thousands of people. Consider the smog, the dirt, and all that is generated from those thousands of cars. Consider how travel on our roads will be impeded by thousands of cars pouring into our community. Consider what all this will do to our wildlife, our trees, foliage, our lakes, our rivers, and our streams. Consider that once you destroy these amenities, they're not coming back. That's not any possibility. I don't know if anyone making these life-altering decisions has ever gone to a racetrack community. Have you seen how the track has altered and changed the surrounding neighborhoods? Have you listened from surrounding areas to the incredible noise that this project entails? I have. Sound echoes and reverberates throughout the hills. Visit a community with this type of foliage and truly understand what this racetrack will do to our Ozarks. See how far you have to go to not hear those sounds. There was a racetrack in our area in California called Sauga Speedway, which someone spoke to before. I lived within a few miles of that racetrack in the hills, and the noise was amazing, and you could not miss it, and you could not sit outside of an evening without hearing that. All the noises from the cars and from the crowds. Many years ago, I lived in Springfield, Missouri. And when my parents divorced, my mother took me to California, where I lived for many years. And when my husband and I retired, we came here to Branson, and we've been here for 3.5 years. We picked Branson for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is the amazing great beauty, serenity, and sense of family that is our home. That being said, I implore each and every one of you to tread carefully and consider what your decisions will do to all of us, not only now, but in the future. There is no other place like our Ozarks, and as stewards and guardians of this beloved hills, we need to carefully study any proposals that would change, alter, or damage the pristine beauty and all the things, great or small, that live within its boundaries. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Tom Ailey. And then Tony Espy. Is Tom here? Okay, we'll move on to Tony. And after that, Spencer, you've already presented, so.
Thank you for listening to me tonight. My name is Tony Espy. I live at 511 Fruit Farm Road in Hollister. And first, I have a couple of points I'd like to make. Our first is I was speaking with a gentleman who I asked to help us out, and a couple of neighbors did. He is with the Pro Audio Concepts, and I have a copy of his report for you. His name is Chris Armstrong, and his background goes, he worked with Diamond Rio, Brooks & Dunn, Roy Clark for 10 years. He is president of a Jeopardy Hills complex and also a co-owner of Pro Audio Concepts. I'm just going to read, because it's kind of redundant, but I'm just going to read a couple things here. My experience, I would think that in the setting of Fruit Farm Road, the reading perhaps as high as 95 to 110 decibels. These readings will be affected by temperature, humidity, and of the day. Also, in his report, he says it could travel 3 to 5 miles. Also, not too much about air pollution, but I had a concern. When they were doing the clearing of the 75-plus acres, you could walk out our front door and you see the equipment right there. The dust clouds were going up in the air 75 feet at least. Of course, the wind blowing from the south, our cars were covered with dust. Every time we wanted to go sit back on the back deck, we had to wipe our furniture off. Now, this is during construction. What's going to happen if there's a race there? In NASCAR, you see these guys pulling the pits, 30 laps, because their tires are shot. Where's all that rubber going? Where's the fumes going? So I'm concerned about pollution, the air pollution of that. Also, I have concerns about hours of operation. Are there any restrictions about hours of operation in Taney County? This is kind of a way out example. But let's say there's a rock concert. By the time those cars get out of the parking lot, it could be 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. Next day you have a race. Those boys could be back in there 6, 7 o'clock in the morning, tuning them up, rubbing them up, doing time trials. We're going to hear all of that noise. And my last comment, everybody's talking about jobs. I know we need jobs in Taney County. But in the newspaper, I read that different times, different amounts are given out. Back in May, 2,600 jobs. Again in May, 2,500. Now in July, we're going to have 3,000 construction jobs. Are those construction jobs, nobody says what they are. Are they full-time for the 18 months they plan to build this? Are they 3 months for people coming in just to do a little shoveling? And I assume that when they hire a general contract to build this, it'd just be like when they built the airport and when they did the four lanes in 65, they brought their people in, the high-paying people. And all the Taney County residents were the laborers. Thank you.
Thank you, Tony. Eddie Coxey. And then after that, Stacy Whitfield.
Eddie Coxey at 631 Fruit Farm Road. Had about 8 pages of code book I want to read to you, because you know how much I love code book. And most of it's been said and everything. So I just want to reiterate a couple of things. When Mr. Crawford was up here, he did read to you a portion from the Taney County Code Book dealing with the compatibility issues of off-site nuisances dealing with the Western District, and that is the district that this falls into. And it basically stated, where it cannot be demonstrated that a potential off-site nuisance, not one that you know about, but a potential off-site nuisance will be acceptably mitigated, the development generating that nuisance is discouraged. Doesn't say you have to, but it said it's discouraged. If you read on down in Section B of that, it says use compatibility is encouraged in predominantly residential areas where zoning requests to another use, be it the request being commercial, industrial, or institutional, are being made, it shall be the responsibility of the Planning Commission to determine if the property change is compatible with the residential area. Okay? So take those words for what they say. Now, there's been a lot of talk about different things, and you're going to hear one side say, we can fix it. You're going to hear another side say, they can't fix it. You know, then maybe they can, maybe they can't. But as I was sitting there thinking, if we know it's going to be an issue, why not ask them to put in the abatement measures rent a couple cars out there, start them up, take your readings at the property line. Did it get abated? If it did, move on to the next one. If it didn't, correct it before you build everything. I mean, there's things that can be done. And I looked over your record for the last several years to see what you do, guys. You're probably running at about a 95-97% approval of the projects here, because that's the job. The job is to help these people get to where they want to be within the guidelines of the Taney County Development Guidance Code. But I want to take you down through just a few that didn't make it. So bear with me just a second. There was a project called Pajama Mamas. Okay? And this is going to hit in all areas over Taney County. Bed and breakfast. Unable to mitigate the issues of traffic that it was going to create and parking issues. Denied. There was Moments by Pat. Photograph studio. Unable to mitigate the parking and the traffic. Denied. Overturned in BOA, but denied by this board because they couldn't mitigate. There was a nightly rentals in the Poverty Point area. Time and time and time again, denied because they can't mitigate the issues. And the last one I want to remind you of is this. It was a place called the Green Center. And if you remember, it came before you, and it was going to be setting out on an area where the center was actually below the level of the road. But around that area were developments such as Whitetail Crossing and Hunter's Glen. And it was denied because it wasn't compatible with the residential areas in that neighborhood, because those were nicer homes. And it was as an area much like what you're looking at here at Fruit Farm Road in Whitfield. There was large areas where there were agricultural land, and then there were several residential neighborhoods. So I went back in there today, and I looked to see what the price range of those nice homes were. And to my amazement, they fell exactly in line with the price range of the homes in Fruit Farm, in Country Farm Estates, and on Whitfield Lane. Same situation, but denied due to incompatibility. So my encouragement to you is this, guys. Throw away all the stuff, all the emotions, everything that's going on. Look at your book. If there are potential issues that need to be mitigated, they need to be mitigated. If they can successfully do that, then fine and dandy. If they can't, then it's not compatible with the residential area. And your answer should be, sorry, can't help you there. That's all I have. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Eddie. Stacy Whitfield? All right, next we have Judy Cornell.
I have done a lot of research over the last few months, and as it turns out, most of my research has already been presented to you guys. There's just a couple of things I wanted to point out. If this is allowed to go through, we were told we would be given passes to get to and from our homes, so that, I guess, so that the visitors to the track will not be able to get to our homes. However, that means that our friends and family, nieces, children, grandchildren, also can't get to our homes. That, to me, is like putting us in a cage and saying, we're going to dictate to you who you can and can't have as visitors while we're doing our thing on your property. Me as a homeowner, I don't believe anybody should be able to tell me who can and cannot come and see me at my home. Let's see. Boy, there's not a lot left for me to say. They said most of it. I would like to say that the retail areas that Loanne was speaking of that are in Kansas City, if done here, would be where my home sits right now and lots of other homes in the area. We moved here because we loved it. It's quiet. It's beautiful. And we don't really want to leave. The Tea Party representative wants us to pay someone else for our water and sewer. Our water in septic tanks are fine. There's nothing wrong with them. It's some of the best water I've had anywhere in this country, and I've lived in several places in this country. There are a couple things I'd like to ask the committee to consider if you decide that this is something you want to approve. I'd like to see a performance guarantee posted in the amount of the project of whatever amount to ensure that all the laws, conditions, and regulations are properly followed as earlier presented, are not done real well with this group. And to pay for the entities that are required to check up on them, make sure they're doing this. Restrictions on noise levels, that was talked about, and acceptable times for these venues. That no tax dollars are spent to help build this project or the infrastructure that is required to run or gain access to this private enterprise. No tax breaks on personal property or any other taxes that would further take money from this county and its schools. Construction time limits. We've heard construction going on at all times of the day and night. I'm a sound sleeper. I don't hear the ones at 2 o'clock in the morning and 4 o'clock in the morning, but I have neighbors that aren't sound sleepers, and they hear it. As was said earlier, you know, it's being heard. I think that's just a blatant disregard for the people that surround this project, the people that are living there, that, you know, go to work every day, come home, have to get some rest to get back up and go to work again. Complete disregard. With accordance to some of the things that were said earlier about not following the rules, you know, it feels to me like there is no concern about any rules, regulations, or the people that might have objections. How it feels to me. There was one other thing I wanted to say. There's been a lot of misinformation put out. Things said directly to people that were untrue. Lots of liberties taken, let's say. I have a package here I put together of just four of them, and I won't go over them. I'll just give this package to you.
Thank you.
And that's pretty much what I got to say.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we have Judy Cornell.
Okay, I'll make sure and get them to staff and they make copies. Thank you.
And then after that, Glenn Mudson. Sorry.
Hi, I'm Judy. And pretty much everybody said what I wanted to say, except that I want to say that I am in complete agreement with this opposition. I'm very concerned with being able to visit my daughter, Stacy, who is just here, because I'm not going to be able to get to her house during these events. The other thing I wanted to say is we keep talking about these couple thousand jobs, maybe 2,000-3,000 jobs. They're temporary jobs, and they're not any guarantee that people from our area are going to be hired for those, or even the permanent jobs once the racetrack's built. But we're trading the beauty and tranquility and quality of life permanently for some jobs that are going to last for 18 months, I heard. That, to me, doesn't seem like a good trade. And especially, like I said, if they're not even guaranteed to be jobs for the people who live here, or they're going to be bringing people in who need lodging. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Judy. Gwen, and then Tammy Pasco.
Madam Commissioner, gentlemen, it's a great opportunity for me to be here. We live in a great, wonderful land where you can listen to pros and cons. This is awesome. This has been a good day for me, as most of my days are good. I live in Walnut Shade, Missouri, which is way north of the proposed track. I am a race fan, have been from my era in South Carolina and Florida. I saw Daytona Beach evolve from racing on the beach to what it is today. We're living hard economic times. Sure, some racetracks have closed. Some are successful. I watched Kansas City. That was a
basically a cow field, I guess. And now look at it now, as one of the realtors stated, what's evolved there. Darlington, probably one of the first few racetracks I know what evolved there. There's good and bad in everything. We live in such a great country that I'm glad I'm here and not where y'all are sitting, because you have a formidable task and a decision to make. And I just pray that y'all make the correct decision. And in closing, and when you make your decision, whatever it will be, I'm okay with it, so long as you do not violate anyone's constitutional right or violate a state law. And if y'all live within those guidelines, whichever way the chips fly, so to speak, then I'm comfortable with it. But keep the Constitution and the state laws in mind when you make this final decision. Thank you very much.
Thank you. After Tammy, we'll have Bob West.
Hi, I'm Tammy Pasco, and I live at 361 Whitfield Lane. That's about 600 feet within Russell Cook's proposed racetrack property. My family and I are very opposed to this project near our neighborhood. I've searched for reasons that you could oppose this project. I started my search in the Taney County Developmental Codes and with the Planning Commission, whose purpose is, among other things, according to Section 1 of the Developmental Code, to conserve and protect property and building values. Can you guys, the Planning Commission, promise to conserve and protect my property and the value of my home? That is what your purpose is, among other things, in the code book. Sorry to put you on the spot, but that's where I got it. Then I have some questions concerning the process of Division 3 permits. According to Appendix D on page 44 of the Taney County Code Book, the process for a Division 3 permit application begins with steps 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Today is step 6, the public hearing. After this, a decision of record will be step 7. According to step 7, when the developer receives their copy of the decision of record and their Division 3 permit, the developer may then apply for Division 1, 2, and or land grading permits. We're just now at step 6. They've been clearing land. I don't understand how they can be on step 7 and today is step 6. I'm a little confused on that. It just seems like they've passed up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. So I don't know if the project has already been approved, and it just seems odd. But to sum it up, I'd like to thank you guys for listening, and like the gentleman said, I wouldn't want to be in your shoes for anything. But would you want it in your backyard? I'd like to leave you with this. Just do for us what you'd want done for yourselves, and that's just the right thing, whatever that is. Thank you.
After Bob, we'll have Gwen Simmons.
I'm Bob West. I'm on the board of directors of Oakmont Community. And if you don't know where Oakmont Community is, Big Cedar is in the development. Many of our members have spoken to us and expressed various reasons for not supporting the complex. Few have showed any positive opinion for the proposal, and we as a board of directors cannot remain silent on anything such as this proposal, so we are firmly against it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. West. Gwen Simmons, and then David Ward.
Thank you. My name is Gwen Simmons, and tonight we've heard from several large landowners. I am not one of them. I own 1/16th of an acre at 569 Fruit Farm Road. I moved there nearly 15 years ago, and I've greatly enjoyed living there and enjoyed the way of life that we've had there. I think this racetrack is catastrophically bad for our neighborhood. Most of our complaints and issues have been raised tonight, and so I will not reiterate those, but I do want to make a point about the noise. I've read several times that it's already in the noise shed of the airport. Well, I've been to car races. I've been to airports. I live underneath the airport currently. There is a qualitative and quantitative difference in the sound between a race car and an airplane. The airplane is gone in 30 seconds to a minute. The race cars will be there for hours, if not days. I have also serious concerns about other environmental issues related to air pollution, water pollution, the water level in our wells. Will we still have water after the racetrack is built? Of course, we have issues with lighting, trash, traffic, increased crime rates, a potential RV campground that will bring hundreds of temporary residents to our neighborhood on a weekly basis. So there are many concerns that you need to consider tonight. We've also heard that our developers want to be good neighbors to those of us there in the fruit farm area. So far, I've not seen much evidence of that. We've been living for months with the sound of bulldozers. We've been breathing the smoke from their fires for months. Nobody's asked me what I thought of the development until tonight, so I appreciate your opportunity to do that tonight. However, I did receive a letter today thanking me, or actually telling me that they had missed my opinion at the meeting to which I was not invited last month. So I would say that as neighbors, they have not yet demonstrated their good qualities. I would also encourage you to protect the resources that we have here in Taney County. I've noticed that on the letterhead of the stationery of the agenda that you have presented us with tonight, you have a logo that includes water and trees. We are proud of that in Taney County. We need to protect that. The statement was made earlier that the undeveloped land has no future. I would argue it's the opposite. That land is our future. So let's protect it. Thank you.
Thank you. David Ward, and then Ruth Ostwinkel.
I am David Ward.
Hi, David.
I appreciate you guys because you're still sitting here and half everybody else is gone. But
not much longer.
And my list here has been pretty well desecrated also, but a couple things that I think still need to be pointed out, and one of them was already touched on, the alcoholic beverage situation. I talked to the ATF people where they put out the permits for alcohol permits for places, and I told them what we had down here and asked them if there's any reason a track couldn't have alcohol, and they said no, as long as they do all the standard things of have to have food along with the alcohol they dispense and so on. And you know, when you have alcohol, you open up a can of worms, because just so many of the younger people, and a lot of them are track followers, use other recreational drugs along with the alcohol. And if you had a 4-hour race going on, there's plenty of time to absolutely get impaired sitting around there drinking and doing your little alcoholic things and your little dope things. And then you load these people out into the street, maybe 5, 10, 15, 20,000 cars, which really is quite a thing when you start thinking about the number. You got a situation then. These guys are going to be sitting, waiting to get to the intersection, waiting to get on the major road. And as they're doing that, road rage starts in. I think our highway patrol, our sheriff's department are going to be overtaxed as far as the work they're going to have to do. They're going to spend hours out there trafficking and so on like that. They said that they are going to build some kind of a complex for fire and medical protection and what was the other one? I forget. But anyway, that's nice if they do it. Now, the words are one thing and doing it something else. But while all that traffic is trying to unload from the track, what happens to the people that maybe have a heart attack or a house that starts on fire? How are you going to get those ambulances and fire trucks and et cetera, police back in there to get things straightened around? It's going to be awfully hard because those are narrow roads. Fruit Farm Road, it wasn't even until about 2 years ago up to the width it had to be a road, a county road to be graded and so on like that. They added 6 inches on both sides and that handled it. But it's still narrow, trees on both sides, and people going down there 30 miles an hour are even a danger. When you have this road system that they're proposing, one of the roads is out the back of the track area and into the basin where Murder Rock and Branson Creek are at. Well, those roads will then end up right back down on Highway 65, only further towards Branson. So they really haven't gained anything, and the people will get sick of it because it's probably a 6-mile trip back there to get back on Highway 65. And if you look at those charts that they have for the roads, and they have these beautiful little old clover leaf type things across to Highway 65 on 86 and 265, if you look at it, it doesn't go anywhere. 86 is a good little old road, secondary road, handles the people that live out there. But you dump on a whole bunch of cars that aren't going to go anywhere except back into the countryside. And say, and 265 is the same situation. In fact, those cars will end up going, a lot of them cost Table Rock Dam, which is already a busy area and so on like that. So I don't see where they're handling the traffic situation at all with that proposed $70 million road improvements. I do know, talking to Shad Sikafoos up there at MoDOT, that there hasn't been a thing yet brought to them that shows that the Branson Creek complex can handle that money, and they and the MoDOT can't. They're broke like everybody else is. So anyway, I am against it, and I hope that when you think about it, that you consider the fact that we have women and children of all sorts in those 204 houses that people live back in there, and I don't think we need that type of persons that doing drugs, doing alcohol, and getting a lot of other things. If you put people out the back of that track, they're going to come down. They're going to see, oh, here's a road off to the left here, which would be Fruit Farm Road or Blue Ridge. And they're going to take off down there, and they're going to end up right back where they started out, more or less, in front of the track. So they haven't gained anything. I don't think we have the road system. I think the road system ought to be a situation where there's an interstate and a major road like Highway 65 and then some good secondary roads to handle the traffic. Thank you.
Thank you. Is Ruth here? Or Jim? Ostwinkle? Okay. Mary Munkle? I'm sorry. Robert's going to speak? Okay, Robert. And then after that, we have Archie Pinnell. Thank you. Unless she's already said it all for you, Robert. Is that normal?
Many times.
Okay.
Everything that I've had to say basically has been said, and I agree with the opposition in its entirety. We live on Whitfield Lane, and our land abuts the racetrack, the proposed racetrack, so you know where we are. There is one issue that we are slightly different on. We lost our home in Hurricane Katrina, and to make a long story very, very short, we didn't stay in the house, so fortunately we made our way north after the storm. We ended up in Branson, which to us was a great place to come to. We had been here many times in the past, at least 2-3 times a year. We loved the place. We stayed in a motel for 6.5 months. That's why I listened to her all the time.
You're on public record, Janelle. I just thought that. Okay.
Don't worry, I'll hear about
okay.
That. And we, in that 6.5 months, made several trips back to the coast to deal with insurance and all of those matters. And we looked for a house back there about 5 minutes after the hurricane. Damaged properties were selling for 2-3 times their original worth. So we went to Plan B, came back to Branson, and after we settled with insurance, such as it was, we started looking for a home in serious fashion. We ended up on Whitfield Lane, which was great. It was a desirable home, great neighbors, everything you could wish for. A couple of years ago, our son got married on the coast, and of course we went down there, and we got to thinking maybe it's time to get back to our old haunts once again. And being there in the winter time, we had our land cleaned up and we looked at homes. And last winter, when we came back here, we checked in with a realtor. And we were told that because of the changing conditions, our chances were slim and none of selling the place for anything near what we had into it. So there we are. By de facto, we perhaps are losing our selling or second house simply because it can't be sold. I would hope that we're not against racetracks per se at all. I would hope they would locate someplace else. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Archie? And then Terry Greeners, I believe, is next.
Hello.
Hi, Archie.
My name is Archie Pinnell. My property adjoins the north side of the Cook property. I have about 3/8 of a mile on the north side of his property. And I have about a 3/8 of a mile down the Fruit Farm Road, too. And they're talking about drinking. I go out every day and pick up a 5-gallon bucket full of pint and half-pint bottles out of my fields down the road anyway. But I'm for this. And one reason is I got 3 girls. And there is really no decent jobs in this area for women. They can work at the store or work at restaurants or motels. Two of them are, one's a graduate from University of Missouri. She works in St. Louis. Has 2 grandkids by her. Of course, we have to either go to St. Louis or ship them back and forth. The other one is a graduate from the University of Kansas. She's in Wichita. So you see that we spend a lot of time on the road. And if we just had enough jobs for one of them to be near would be just perfect for me, but I'm for the thing. I've always been for it. I think it's the best thing for the county. This is a tourist area to start with. The tourist industry is what this county is built on, and that's what it is. It's all tourist, and they're going to take care of it. They got the best people to take care of this whole thing over here. They've got it figured out, the water, the sewage, the runoff. And most people don't even go into that all. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. After Terry, we've got somebody. I believe their initials are JB. That's really all I can tell. Jack, maybe. If you think you're them, I guess you'll be next.
My name's Terry Grievers. I live on 613 Fruit Farm Road. We look outside our living room window and we see this bare hill. When they were burning the trees, we had to keep all our doors and windows closed so that we wouldn't smell the fumes. I thought my house was on fire the first time I smelled it. We moved down here from Minnesota because of we like the beautiful scenery and the quiet neighborhood we bought out there in the country so we could have a quiet neighborhood away from the busy city life. My concern is the noise and the value of our property. I got a feeling that it will go down because nobody's going to want to live that close to a noisy racetrack. And also, more than likely, our taxes will probably go up. All the other concerns I've had have been already addressed. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have a taker for Jack or Joe or JB? Okay, we're going to move on. I think the next one is Coy. Coy Jr., possibly. I can't read the last name. Frank Rushing. Pardon, what's that, sir? Hey, is your last name start with a B? Okay. Frank Rushing. Takers. Coy Stott. I know a lot of folks have left. Gary. Okay, Gary Blevins. Come on down. And Jim Duncan after that. Is that Gary? I can't tell back there. No? Okay. Jim Duncan? All right. Michael Hill after that. If I miss you, make sure and let me know. Okay.
My name is Jim Duncan. I live at 318 Whitfield Lane. I'm one of the 11 owners on that road. I've had the opportunity actually to speak to this board a couple years ago. I recognized Sean's face when I was at Paradise Point, and at that time, Eddie Coxey was a real pain in my backside because he held me to everything I had to do right, and building condos and sewer plants and et cetera. So I'm familiar with that process. Yeah. Seems like some of that's been bypassed. I'm a fan of racing, though. It's my challenge. I grew up at Lake of the Ozarks and probably one of the rare guys in this room that actually drove a race car. A lot of fun. A lot of noise. Still attend races. I love them. But I'm concerned because I know what the noise situation is. I'm also concerned because generally in a situation that you're trying to partner with somebody, you want to make sure that it's a win-win. It's a partner, you have a full trust of what's going on. It appears that we kind of have a bully situation going on. I don't mind, and we were invited to a meeting and had some good interchange over at the Oakmont Center one night, but it was more of, here's what I'm doing. And it's a little shocking and to see an overlay of a road that takes out your next-door neighbor's house. And this is the first you're hearing about it. I understand it's conceptual, but from where that hump of that road is to our house, it's either where we're standing this distance or that back wall. And I don't see any, and I've asked, haven't seen any plans or thoughts of, what are you going to do with these guys? What are you going to do with homeowners? Discussion on noise abatement and some of these other things has come up, debatable. But what do you do with the folks who you slap a road? Mr. Cook shared with me that his goal was to put a 5-lane road so you could do 4 in and 1 out and reverse it. And there's not a whole lot of room there on the Whitfield hump between 65 and our front door. I would like to ask for your guys' help before you make a decision on that is, what are you going to do with these guys? What's the plan? It appeared when that kind of came up was, don't know yet. Well, that's pretty key. Pretty key and component to know what you're going to do with somebody. And I understand we've got neighbors further away from us, but we're on that road where everybody's backyard ties into his fence. There's probably got to be some sort of a level of from noise and or nuisance level, from traffic and everything else, that you've got to deal with these neighbors. You've got to have a plan for those that you're taking out their house or you're putting a 2 or 3 or 5-lane road right there. We have no room to go. Great neighborhood, willing to move. Give me something reasonable, I'm out of there. And I know a lot of people feel that same way, and we've had meetings in our area. But at least give us the choice. At least say, here's their plan, they'll do this for you or this. But no plan, that's not an option. There's no plan. That's not saying we're being fair with you, we want this to work out. It's just take it or leave it. That, to me, again, that's kind of a bully mentality. If I say, here's what I'm doing, I'm taking your property, being one of you guys, you'd say, whoa, 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 we don't do that in Taney County. We try to work things out. Shove it down our throats. Help us out a little bit. Give us something here that's fair and reasonable, that is a win-win, not a take it or leave it. A man's house is probably one of his most biggest assets that we'll ever have. To have that taken away from you, or chopped off or not considered at all, pretty short-sighted. That's the emotional part that gets kicked in, is I would ask that you guys would help us consider that, is what you're going to do with these guys that are right there getting knocked out. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Michael Hill. And then next is Brett Kreiner, I think.
I would like to thank the commission for the opportunity to speak this evening. And I come in open-minded, and it seems as though before I leave tonight, I will have made my mind up. It seems like there's a controversy between the east side of 86 and the west side. I don't understand what that is, and that's not your problem either. I understand that. But from the commission standpoint, the revenue that can be gained from this is just unreal. You know, we all want to add to that 75% purse to the schools from our taxation. It's actually a win-win situation. Now, what's on your minds and what you have got to weigh from what I gather tonight, it's going to be pretty simple. You got a week to make the decision according to the paper. And everybody thinks, well, they've got this and they got that. Well, from what I've heard tonight, we have a problem, and it's called noise. The paper stated something like 6 to 10 venues of the high power motors a year. I've been in the workforce for over 40 years. We have a simple solution to the noise problem. When you go to bed, I just want to prove this point. When you go to bed tonight, I wore earplugs for 46 years, 8 hours a day. And I preserve my hearing. Now, it's a pretty simple solution, but it's something to think about. And it seems to be the problem with this ongoing. I guarantee you that the residents, any of them that is of half mind, when they start their John Deere tractor up in their garage tomorrow to mow their grass, they're going to slap a set of earplugs in their ears. Now, do we want to throw away thousands and thousands of dollars of revenue for Taney County in lieu people maybe having to wear a set of earplugs a couple nights a year for half the night? I want to thank you.
Thank you. Is Brett here, Brett Kreiner? Jerry Adam? Raymond Grievers? Debbie Bullware. And then after that, it looks like Bev Burns.
My name is Debbie Bullware.
Hey, Debbie. Hi. Thank you.
Pick up the mic.
There you go.
Okay. We're forgetting something. We're forgetting the number one issue that is responsible for keeping our workforce in poverty. And that's the lack of full-time, year-round jobs and the lack of economic diversity in our area. Our recent history tells us that we can build tourist attractions that bring people here. But it also tells us that good tourism projects are not enough to support local working families. Like the Branson Landing. It brought some good construction jobs for a short time, but then the project was complete. And the long-term aspects of the project revealed itself. More part-time jobs, more layoffs in the off-season, more jobs without benefits, and more of our workforce and their children living in motels. Yes, that means homeless. Do you realize that every month from 2007 to 2010, the unemployment rates have increased over the previous year, and in most of the peak months actually doubled? December 2007, 5.5%. December 2010, 10.9%. We're going in the wrong direction. The aftermath of the project has also actually increased the number of homeless working families. It is estimated there are now 40 motels housing as many as 1,200 people, 300 of those being children. Is this how our community that welcomes nearly 8 million tourists each year with our famous Ozarks Hospitality takes care of the 28,000 people that make up our local workforce in Taney County? Mayor Presley summed it up best at a meeting I attended. We can advertise our family-oriented, happy Christian environment, but if we don't take care of our own people, it's a lie. And she's right. And there's better ideas out there. Look at the Simmons family that had the foresight to create a secure underground warehouse facility, which is now a state-of-the-art data center. Why are companies like Google choosing Oklahoma and every other state around us instead of Branson, Missouri? What are you doing as leaders to get those year-round jobs and millions of investment dollars here? Even the Hollister Water Park was a better idea than this one, a proposal that created a year-round destination with an indoor event center at a highway interchange that was already paid for, with the ability to carry thousands of cars, already adjacent to an industrial park, and the land has already been destroyed there too. Have you considered that this might be a better location and venue? The Ozark Mountain Legacy Initiative surveyed thousands of residents and revealed that the number one thing that could most enhance the quality of lives for the members of our community, those members that you represent, is year-round jobs, jobs that will sustain them for many years to come. Can we please set aside the petty politics and focus on making decisions that benefit the whole county, not just a chosen few? Can we make our community what it needs to be for a bright and sustainable future, a community that cares about one another, where we all come together in a spirit of cooperation? Thank you for your consideration of these concerns.
Thank you. As per our own policies, before we move on, we have to extend the meeting when it gets to 9:30. We have to vote to do that, and we're going to take a short 5-minute break. You all can sneak out whenever you can.